Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, everybody. My name is Garnet Lee, and big, big, big birthday wishes to Dave Del Rio, maybe.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, brother. We miss you here in the studio, but we hope you are having a damn fine time out there. Although I did see your Facebook update that you were excited about mowing a lawn.
What?
It's like, I just mowed a lawn. First time I've done that in 10 years. That was awesome. Oh,
Yeah, the show is falling apart without him, but, you know, I hope
he's
having a good time.
We have no idea what we're doing. I have no idea what's happening. Help me, help me. Danger, Will Robbins. Mr. Jeff Cannata is here to my left.
That's with two N's and one T, in fact.
And the other Jeff is at the other end of the table.
Hi, everybody.
That means it's Indie Jeff Week.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bringing a lot of indie love today.
Dude, he is bringing the indie love.
I'm so excited to hear about all these awesome games.
I'll tease it up for you real quick. Frozen Synapse, Grand Prix Story, Wasteland Angel, Jamestown, Journey Beta, Atom Zombie, Smasher. Sounds like a whole, it's like a smorgasbord of indie games, which we will be giving their own special segment in the show. And then sandwiched in between the Jeffs is the
I think I should change my name to Joffrey.
Is the
you know, I was gonna say Joffrey.
I was gonna say you're like the rich creamy feeling.
The Joffrey from Toys R Us. I always got really confused when it said they're like Jeffrey. I'm like, who the hell's Jeffrey? It's spelled G.
Yeah. Like spells it like a douchebag.
What?
This is true. Wow.
That's him. That's the hammer.
Hello.
Welcome back, Plan B.
I was really busy this week, so I had to make some time.
That's how you had time to finish Zelda, which is one of the things you definitely want to talk
about.
My
mom is very excited. I'm back on the show. So,
hi, Mom.
She's been sending us so many emails.
She has.
We could not resist.
She's on that shit.
Yeah.
Your boy is awesome. We love him.
Thanks for having me again.
Of course.
Good to be back.
So, let's see. What do we got coming up on the show other than Indie Jeff and Zelda? We have Jeff's dove into Shadows of Dam, which you talked a little bit about last week. We still have love, so we might share some of that.
Yeah.
We have some Dungeon Siege 3 love. We're going to catch up a little bit on the Uncharted beta and Child of Eden because Billy loves his Kinect.
Uh-huh.
He's glad. He bought a Kinect just for Child of Eden, as a matter of fact.
No, I borrowed one. I walked three blocks to borrow one.
You borrowed Sterling's?
Actually, yeah.
You dog. You like...
You know, it's still $150, man. It hasn't been on, you know.
And walking three blocks is kind of a Kinect app.
Actually, Sterling walked the three blocks. I actually just...
You made him walk down and bring it to you?
He had to come over anyways. Whatever. It's three frickin' blocks.
Nice.
I hope you at least, like, gave him a beer or something for his troubles.
I did.
Except you told me you played sober, which I still don't get.
What, Eden?
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Yes, we will.
All right, so we got that coming up. We have some listener feedback. We have Indie Jeff. We have two big news stories. We're going to change news up a little bit, not only because Zav isn't here, but also, like, he and I have been talking about this. Actually, he's been spearheading this, that the news is kind of weird coming on a podcast, maybe, and it would be more interesting for us to take some topics that are relevant and interesting and give them a little more discussion than just, this happened, okay, next story.
Yeah.
So we're going to try that. While Zav's not here. And then if it works, it'll be our idea. We can share it with him.
Yes.
Take all the credit. It'll be freaking fantastic.
America!
Stealing from Canada again.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's how we do.
And then also in the music break today, we have kind of a fun thing that Dave set up before he left, which is we have a couple that were recently married on June 4th who submitted a song to our SoundCloud. And we're going to play their song, This Is How It Goes, from the indie folk rock group 28 May. So you got a lot to look forward to on the show. Let's get rolling. What should we start with? Should we start with some Shadows of the Damned?
Shadows of the Damned.
Since we're returning to it, we don't want to
kill
it too much.
Yeah, we don't have to
belabor it. I just want to know, after last week, what you heard me talk about, what do you think of it?
Well, you're the reason that that I played it, to be quite honest. It wasn't high on my list of excitement. You know, Suda's games are kind of hit and miss for me. I don't know.
So why do you think that is?
Mostly the Wii.
Okay.
That's a fair statement. But I don't know. I love
at least
his
it's honest
enthusiasm and his creative sort of passion for these worlds that he's making and his sort of unabashed genre, over the top mentality that he puts into all that stuff. But sometimes it can be a little tedious, and I don't think all his gameplay concepts are as polished as they could be from game to even from game to game. And the same is true with Shadows of the Damned. I think as much fun as it is, and as glad as I am that he's now in an HD environment and we have a pretty looking game, and there is so much fun, whimsical, crazy in here to get lost in.
Dude, just the interplay between Garcia and his Johnson, awesome.
Yeah. But as much of that as there is in the game of just like, exactly. I have to find a strawberry to feed to a baby head that's attached to a door in order to open it. Yes, take me there. Take me to your crazy mind, sir. As much as I like that stuff, there are a lot of really unpolished gameplay concepts still at work here, I think.
Really? See, that's interesting, because my take on the game was that it really worked because Suda's crazy, like Suda's creative unboundedness was held in check by the fact that you're basically playing an Unreal shooter. And because you're playing an Unreal shooter, I still know what the hell to do in the game. As long as I have a gun in my hand and I can point it at something and pull the trigger, I still have that to go back to.
And that combat is really well realized in this game. It feels visceral, and everything has weight, and it's chunky, and you shoot stuff and you feel it, and each weapon feels different than the others. Yep. And there's a lot to like with the combat.
Great stunner move. Good.
Yes. Melee combat's really awesome. It's great. But I wish it was more than just a shooter. I really do.
Really?
I kept wishing that this game was more Darksiders than it is.
But here's the thing, is you were upset about other Suda games for being hard to penetrate because the gameplay idea is not working as well as the creative concepts.
Yeah.
Here we give you a game where the creative concepts run wild, but the gameplay is something you're
very
really
grounded.
Familiar with.
Yeah.
And you want something else.
We
can't satisfy you, Jeff Cannata.
This is true. And it's kind of a nit to pick, I think, in this regard, criticizing the combat and sort of what the game is. I thought the world was so interesting, and there were such weird things that I've never seen before, and it's this tapestry of bizarre.
Tapestry?
You know, yeah. I wanted to be able to have more fun exploring it rather than being stuck in a very linear, scripted environment, you know, moment-to-moment thing. And I wished it had been more Darksiders. I wish it had been more Zelda-y. I wish it had been more like when I upgrade my Johnson. I mean, I'm just speaking in the parlance of the game. When I upgrade him into a new weapon, instead of becoming a shotgun or, you know, something very conventional, a machine gun, I wish it had turned into a grappling hook or a, you know, some sort of new traversal element or something that opened up the environment to new. I wanted it to be more.
So you want
Metroid-y.
A Johnson that grabs onto something but won't let go.
Exactly, Garnet. Now we're speaking the wait. What? You know what I mean?
My Johnson gets its hooks in you, you ain't going anywhere.
And again, that's a minor complaint because it's I don't really like criticizing games for what they aren't, because clearly the game wasn't trying to be that. I just found this universe to be ripe for that kind of experience of, you know, wandering around and finding. I like how many secret things are in this world and kicking down things and you find something hidden. And
yeah.
That's great. I blow it open and make me able to wander around even greater. You know, I make it less linear. I think I would have appreciated it more.
Jeff, you started it up, right?
Yeah, I have. How far into it are you, Jeff?
I'm at the end of Act 3, so I'm not.
Okay, so you're further than I am. I basically picked it up and played the first chapter and a half, and I've been, you know, involved in some other games and stuff. So I'll be getting back to it because I am liking what I'm playing. Again, I was going to ask you guys about how much he switches up the gameplay, because what I've experienced so far has been pretty, you know, standard shooter corridor, fairly linear. You know, you were talking about them switching up the gameplay quite drastically later on.
Yeah, there's some experimental spots later on. Like, first of all, you guys have to finish the game because it has a terrifically hilarious plot line sort of twisting at the end. And Act 4 is genius. Act 4 brings in a number of new things. I mean, I don't want to spoil too much because there's some fun parts to it, but there's an entirely new sort of play mechanic that it introduces that leads up to one of the bosses actually being inside that play mechanic as well. That's really well done, quite fun to do. There's also one complete failure, which we talked about last week, which is the chase scenes with Paula. There's three of them. Mm-hmm. Those get kind of annoying. And then there's one crazy shooting scene, which is really quite awesome and atmospheric. You're on top of this building, and this is when you get like the the giant boner or whatever it is, and you're like become like a turret, and you're on top of this building inside of what's supposed to be like the red light district of hell, and there's like this awesome jazz music playing in the background. It feels like you're in like some weird 50s jazz hall, but still sort of weird and dark, and you're like blowing away giant like three-story demons as they walk towards you, and it's wow. just crazy. It's
you're,
so
you were right.
Creasy,
you were very
awesome.
Right to compliment the music. It is
so good.
Excellent. Start to finish, excellent. And lots of different styles. And
yes. And my apologies for mispronunciation last week in my excitement of Akira Yamaoka's name. There you go. I apologize. I've been
You said Yoko of, Ono, didn't you?
I had no idea. I probably was just excited and blurted out.
It's not Larry.
No, so I was really excited. It's really good music. And that, like the jazzy music in there is really amazing. Really good.
Now, do you think that I have not played the game. I saw the game, I think, during GDC. Do you think that he kind of more standardized it just because and dialed it in a little bit more because maybe because it's an EA game and they kind of wanted to...
Well, I think that's the balance that they were going for.
We want you to be fucked up, but we don't want you to be too fucked up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like...
No, I absolutely. And I think that that's a lot of where you feel Mikami's influence is this thing feels like a survival horror game in its pacing and structure, much more so than a shooter.
Yeah.
Because the sections that are shooter-like, yeah, they're great. And actually, I find the combat really fun. I call them the zombie demons. They put on quite a fight. And there's some really – that's another thing that's underappreciated. Even through the end of the game, they're constantly introducing new rank-and-file enemies just to keep it interesting, just to keep mixing it up, to keep throwing you off guard with a little bit different attack. Mm-hmm. That's really smart.
See, that's really – and that's what I really like about Suda in general. I mean, do you guys ever play No More Heroes, the second one?
No,
not play
I never
the second
did.
One.
Okay. Perfect example, though, about switching it up, being totally bizarre. The game is structured around all these boss fights. You have to, you know, make your way up the assassin chain ladder. One of the boss fights, out of nowhere, just randomly, it takes place, and you're both in these giant mech suits. And it's
Whoa.
Like, it's a big mech battle, and it's nothing like any of the other boss battles that you play, but that's the kind of stuff that I like that Suda51 does really well, and it sounds like he's doing a bit of that in this game.
And, you know, part of my complaint that you touched on last week, too, Garnet, is that all the boss battles, while different in... setting, and there's some where you're moving around, there's somewhere you're in a giant arena, the bosses themselves are all very different, they all definitely boil down to figure out a way to shoot the glowy bit.
It's and, a shooter. I don't know what else you do.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe if there was less emphasis on
I don't
boss
know,
battles.
Gears doesn't do that. Like Gears doesn't go, here's the red dot, shoot at the big red glowing dot thing.
Well, it kind of has
giant eyeball
you,
on the
it kind
fish
of
thing.
Points you at yeah. it, but I mean, it, you know, it's the same thing with Vanquish. It was always the same. Here's the red thing, shoot it, you know.
Right.
You know, it's interesting because I think that part of it is that by the end of this game, there's a bit of boss fatigue that sets in.
For sure.
Because it is very strongly tied into like the game in general, because all of Fleming's minions that he throws against you, the bosses especially, they need to have their character. They all have their characteristic thing that they are that's cool about them. You know, I'm trying to like walk the tightrope and not spoil stuff. And so that figures into like how you're going to fight them in their boss bite and what their weaknesses are and what their character is like. And you get all those things. And then the deficiency comes from at the end of the day, you're running around with a gun in your hand. And so the only way to interact with them is to point it at them. And then you have to have a target to shoot.
Yeah, but... You know, you mentioned how fun it is to fight the rank and file, and I agree with you. And there was a couple of bosses that I fought, or at least one I remember specifically that was that would continue to spawn new enemies around me until I killed it,
mm-hmm.
an infinite loop of enemies, mm-hmm. and just having tons of enemies coming at me was awesome. And I think that if there had been less of an emphasis on having a big boss with a bullseye on its forehead. And had more dynamic ways to shoot the rank and file at me, you know,
well, you
I
know
would
my
have appreciated
take.
That more.
I'm against boss fights in first-person shooters as a rule. I don't know how you get around it really in this sort of game
yeah.
because it's part and parcel of the design and the entire flow of the thing. But I'm not much for boss fights because I just find them really difficult to integrate into the game system.
Yeah.
There you go, Shadows of the Damned. You should be playing this game.
I want it.
It's pretty clever and funny. I mean, it's definitely got a juvenile sense of humor, and that can be a little fatiguing, in fact.
See, I think it walks that line very adroitly of being, you know, like, here you are in hell, surrounded by blood and demons. Your girlfriend is getting, like, ripped apart all the time, and yet it never gets dark. It's like,
well, define dark.
I never had like one of those moments where I'm watching it and I'm all like, wow, this is really heavy, man.
Right.
Because it's just like, you're just having
silly.
A good time with it.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it never falls off the side of like Duke Nukem where it's just completely lost in, you know, self-referential silliness. Yeah, I think it does a really good job of walking that line. I really like Garcia Hotspur too. He's fucking hilarious. Garcia fucking Hotspur. It's my idol. I want to be Garcia Hotspur now. So I'm going to go for it.
Get a purple jacket.
Get a purple jacket.
Tattoos and a boner, and then you're all set.
He's halfway there.
I feel so lost that I have not touched this game, and everybody's talking about all this crazy, just Twitter, the day, or like when press got this thing, and just seeing people talking about all this random crazy shit in reference to the game. I was like, the fuck did he? I mean, Suda's crazy, and like, I understand grasshopper games, but it just seems like a perfect grasshopper game. So, do you think it's their best?
Most accessible. Absolutely. So, I mean, does that make it the best? Every one of these experiences and so I haven't played No More Heroes 2, but having played No More Heroes and Killer 7, I would say that every one of them is their own unique experience. And it's very, very hard to say, well, this is the best because they're not, I mean, you just can't stack them. They're all
batshit crazy.
Yeah.
Like you don't really have a whole lot of through lines you can compare.
But if you've ever been curious about a Suda game, this is the one to go get because you can pick it up and play it if you've ever played a third person shooter. It's just a third person action adventure game. You can play this and then get all of the side benefit of all of that creative spark. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And you finished the game, right?
Yes, I finished the game.
Garnet Lee finished a game. Yeah. Everybody. No shit.
That's why he's so enthusiastic about it. It's like, guys, the Seriously? Ending of games are cool.
There's credits.
You can take the disc out and then put it away.
People made these things.
Credits are pretty hilarious because even like, if you read the credits, so like, no demons were
Neo
actually
Gaff
were
is
harmed.
Now exploding as they find out that you just beat a game. It's true.
Whatever. You beaten any games lately?
Yes, I have. Legend of Zelda.
But that's old news.
Ocarina of Time.
How many times have you beaten that now?
That's actually my second. That's only my second.
Oh.
I played through it once.
For those who don't know, Billy is a huge Nintendo fan.
Maybe.
Huge.
Maybe.
It depends on the day of the week and what they're doing. But, I finished. I kind of marathoned through it the first weekend, and then I took some time off, and then finished it up yesterday, 2 days ago.
On 3DS.
On 3DS. Marathoning a 3DS game, by the way. I was a little nervous that, like, my eyes are going to melt or whatever with all the 3D effects. But I kept the 3D slider pretty much two-thirds or full. And the 3D effect is amazing. Like, if you play through the first, the entrance section, you know, when they did the demos, like, that forest looks gorgeous with all the little particles flying around in 3D. It looks absolutely amazing. But if you're a fan of the original, some people are calling this the director's cut version of Ocarina of Time. And I don't know if I would do that because usually in director's cuts, they add a lot of stuff and they really didn't. And even Nintendo advertised it like, we added all this stuff, like 3D and a boss battle. And really? Like, okay, 3D is inherent with the system. A boss challenge mode really isn't too much. I mean, that's what games are doing. You know, that could have been in the original for all I care. So,
did they add a voiceover that tells you that Link is a replicant?
They should. But, but the one thing that they didn't – well, and actually the boss battle thing, they don't really explain too well in the game. You have to – like I expected after beating the game that it would be in the main menu. You could go into this mode. But no, it's actually you go back to your house and then you go by your bed and that's where you access the boss battle thing. I guess
it's under your bed? There's a monster under your bed?
All of the monsters are under the bed. But I guess there's a character in the game that tells you about this, but I wasn't paying attention or whatever. But that was kind of lost to me. One thing that the game does really, really well, do you remember the super guides from Mario?
Oh, yeah.
So they didn't even really talk about this too much, at least to the press. But like there's these rocks, kind of like the rocks that you hit in the regular Ocarina of Time. There's mm-hmm. these other ones that you can crawl into and you can get kind of super guides where, say, you're stuck in a certain area. It'll show you a video of a section of the game, but it'll give you the gist, but it won't tell you how to beat it. So, and it's not just with bosses, but it's with even just room puzzles. It's really, really, really well done.
But you have to find that.
There
that
has
rock.
To be a rock nearby, which kind of sucks because you have to go get out. But maybe it, you know, it kind of it deters you to you know from going and just running to have a you know a fat guide or something like that open all the time. But you know, I wish they would have added more stuff, like maybe orchestrate the music outside of just you know the new orchestrated theme that's at the end of the game. You know, I wanted more for the 40, you know, for especially for the people that are going back that have already that bought it on N64 or had the version on GameCube, give people a reason to go back and play it again. I mean, coming as Ocarina of Time is one of my top five games of all time. Like, I loved playing through it again. I had so much fun. That's why I marathoned through it. I just turned off my phone and I'm playing the shit out of this.
Do you just remember all the puzzles or?
No, I felt so dumb. I really did. That's why, hence the super guys are really nice. But, you know, I remember the first couple dungeons because I've done those before, but I hadn't played like the second half of the game. And the game's long and there's so much secret shit. There's so much side stuff. And it's actually difficult. Like Wind Waker and Twilight Princess were not hard games. Like I never died in Wind Waker, but I've died in Ocarina of Time. Like it's challenging. But, you know, if you've never played through Ocarina of Time, play this version. It's
how did you find the controls? Great. You know, of course, we're accustomed to having played that game originally with a full-size controller. Now you have your hand around just the 3DS.
Initially, the first couple hours weren't too bad, but there were some boss battles that I'd have to readjust my hand to get around the, like, the make sure I had full control over the slide pad a little bit better. Z-trigger is the L-trigger now, but everything else was fine. And having... being able to switch things on the fly using the touchscreen with your items and the gear that you're wearing is awesome. It's really, really, really nice. So,
how about playing the Ocarina song? Did you remember all of them? Is it pretty much translate
one-to-one?
No, and
you can cheat because instead of having to like bounce back and look and say, oh, XYA, XYA, you can have it on screen on the bottom screen and then do it. So...
that's Billy. He's always looking for the quick way out.
You're the delirious old guy. Come on.
Delirious old guy.
It makes it a little easier. The water temple is still a bitch. I don't care if you can toggle the heavy boots on and off with the touchscreen. That temple is a bear. Seriously. It's super hardcore, but it's amazing. It's still one of the best games ever.
All right.
Ever.
So long as we're talking about portable game experiences, I know Jeff is very excited about a new iOS game.
Yeah,
and now he's thrilled because I brought it up before the first break.
I can't believe you pitched to it.
I know.
Yeah, I was doing some traveling last weekend, so I was playing some iOS stuff.
And you got to...
I got to play... So Ticket to Ride is a board game that probably a lot of people have heard of. I think if there was a Mount Rushmore of designer board games, probably be Settlers of Catan, Carcassonne, Ticket to Ride, and probably Dominion. So Ticket to Ride is like in that pantheon of crossover games that are like sold in Toys R Us and people know of them.
No diplomacy up there.
Diplomacy is hardcore. It's the friend ender. but, you know, this is a very accessible game. It's one of those, they call them gateway games for people to get into designer board games. It earns its right as being as famous and popular as it is. It is a great, great game. You basically are building, trying to connect trains from you know, one stop to another. There's lots of different maps for it. I think the one the game comes with is USA. So you're, you know, trying to connect LA to Seattle or whatever, and you have certain cars that allow you to do that, right? So it's a great board game. It's really accessible, easy to learn, and hard to master. But they just came out with an iOS version. And Days of Wonder puts out the game. Days of Wonder has a very high quality reputation. And this is a high quality iOS game. They also put out Small World, which I talked about a while back on the show. And this has every level of polish. It's beautiful, great graphics.
So customarily, a big part of the board game experience is sitting around the table with your friends, right?
Right.
How much of that is lacking when you're just trying to play it on a phone by yourself? And is it still a multiplayer experience, or is this thing soloable?
Yeah, that's the big thing. It's actually mainly used for soloing.
Okay.
It has a great multiplayer online mode, But it lacks two major features, which I hope they update in, that are really sad that they don't have, that Small World has, which is their other app. And that is, you know, playing in real time with real people sitting around you with one version of the game.
Hot seating.
Yes. Yeah, pass and play, I guess they call it, right?
Okay. So they don't have that. Okay.
They don't have – that's not a feature of the game. Now, Ticket to Ride has – as part of it is stuff that you see that other players can't see, but you could have a you know, a button that you push. Okay, I'm going to pass to my friend, so it hides your cards and shows theirs. Whatever, you know, they could work.
It seems
have a workaround.
It seems like something could be solved.
Yeah, and for a $7 app, I mean, again, this is a $50 boxed game that you would buy in a store. $7 is a pretty good price to have it completely fully functional, and you can buy all the expansions. I think all the expansions, a number of the expansions in app for like 99 cents a piece. It's crazy cheap and they're great to have. But it would be nice for a $7 app to be able to go, well, we aren't able to play the board game, but you know, we're sitting around right now. We could just pass and play.
Right.
The other feature that they don't have is asynchronous play, which, so, you know, where I could do my move and then I could wait, like with Words with Friends or something.
Right.
Where I could wait for my friend to do his move.
So basically, if we want to play online, we have to be online at the same time, ready to play a game.
Yeah.
And just play it.
The good news is it has a really robust community, so you can pretty much always find a game. And if someone leaves your game midway through, it'll sub in an AI opponent to keep
it. But what sort of time am I talking about to play a game of it?
It depends on how fast you do your move and how skillful you are, but I think a half an hour. 45 minutes.
So it goes.
It's not super long.
This isn't like one of those sit around all night with a case of beer games.
No. This is not one of the heavy euros. It's very much for
heavy euros. I didn't know they were called heavy euros.
Yeah. So the euro style games are those big strategy mind thinkers. You know. This is great.
This is Gustav. He's a heavy euro.
Yeah. Right. Don't make me invite my heavy euro friend. But it's a great welcoming into designer board games, and I think it's a beautiful version and a way to be able to play solo in a really accessible way. It has an awesome tutorial. So it's like video that shows you how to play the game in a very elegant way.
As an experienced player, do you find the solo play to be as rewarding? I mean, does the AI know what the hell it's doing?
It seems to. I haven't lost.
it seems to, but so, I haven't you know, lost.
So
you know,
I don't know.
I'm pretty good, though.
I don't know how challenging it is. I don't know if I'm just got lucky or if I'm, you know, I have some experience. I don't know. I've only played like 3 or 4 games all the way through against the AI opponent.
How many games have you played total?
Less than 10.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, not a ton. Right. I mean, I was playing on while I was traveling. Okay. But I don't think it compares to the sit down with my friends, pull out the board experience. But I don't think any of the iOS versions. I love that they're making so many of these board games into iOS games because it's like rampant at this point.
Sure.
It's harder to find games that they haven't made into OS games at this point. But it's still not as fun as that tactile experience of sitting on a table and moving my piece.
But on the upside, for a $7 app on your iPhone, it's way more evergreen than a lot of the $2 apps that you buy and play for like 2 weeks and then put down. Because we already know, I mean, people have been playing this board game for how long? Decade?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I don't know when it came out. Probably early 2000s it came out. Yeah.
So we already know it's evergreen. We already know it's something you'll be into for a long while, and you can't beat that for your $7, right?
Right.
And especially over the summer when you're looking for lots of new stuff to play. Like, I'm disappointed. We got this coming up later in the show in the news. Summer of Arcade dates and pricing. I wish Summer of Arcade was ready to start now because it doesn't start until July 20th. I need Summer of Arcade to start right now.
Well, summer has started, so Summer of Arcade should be starting.
I know. Exactly.
Exactly.
All right, well, we're just getting started on the show. If you stick around, when we come back on the other side, we will do some more of what you've been playing. We still have Indie Jeff and, of course, those Summer of Arcade dates and pricing all coming up on Weekend Confirmed. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. Still to come on this show, a little listener feedback. We always like to hear from you on shacknews.com in the show thread. Jeff's always there with us, and Jeff Mattis will be there with us. Billy, you could come on the Shack News thread.
I can.
We won't bite.
I'm afraid of the heavy euros that you pissed off.
The heavy euros.
Seriously.
And they're bratwursts.
Have you guys heard how much this GameFlap thing has taken over the world?
Christ. What?
GameFlap, dude. The GameFly app. The GameFlap.
It's where you stick your games.
See, here's one of the funniest things in the world is I make gaffes of like crazy words and people make fun of me. Jeff makes up GameFlap and it's the best fucking thing since sliced bread.
It's intentional and it's awesome. I'm telling you, dude. Somebody just got the GameFlap Twitter handle and has been tweeting me.
Yeah.
So we another missed opportunity.
Damn it.
You could have had it. It all could have been yours. Now you just have to wait. Now you just have to wait and watch.
Yeah, I just have to wait and watch.
Now you just have to wait and watch. All right, we're back.
I'm a wait watcher at this point.
More, you know, like one of the funny things that happened over the last 3 weeks with E3 happening was that games came out and we talked about them a little bit and then we just sort of casually forgot about them.
That's what we do.
It's kind of bad. You know, people actually make fun of us about that. They're like, why don't you just talk about the games you're playing? So games we're playing and what we're talking, which is actually what we do, but we sort of consume them at breakneck pace in this business.
It's unfortunate that it's kind of what we have to do.
Yeah. So one of the ones we're going to catch up on a little bit is Red Faction Armageddon, because Jeff Mattis has been playing that. Jeff Cannata played it and liked it, but we see it like no one else had played it. Well, we just sort of skated through it.
I liked it in a way, but I was disappointed based on how much I loved Guerrilla. Was that your assessment as well?
I never fell in love with Guerrilla like everyone else. Like, I loved the open world destruction stuff, but beyond going out and blowing shit up, it was kind of, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot tying that game together. I don't think.
Amen.
I didn't need anything to tie it to. You're just like, now that there's a tether mechanic, it ties the game together.
No. I mean, Armageddon is more focused. It's, you know, there's, you know, a cinematic story going on, you know, for mission.
Such that it is.
Well, okay, yeah, fair enough. It's not Shakespeare. It's not even that good, but it's there.
Is the story better than
it's not Shakespeare. It's not even that good.
Is the story better than the last game? Because that's what totally just.
What story in the last game? There was like an opening cutscene.
It was stupid.
And then you...
Come on. There was a whole bunch of different areas that you needed to get to.
That doesn't make a story.
What were you doing?
Pretty sure there was a convoy at one point.
Why were you doing
a
convoy?
There was like a bridge you had to blow up.
I remember that part. Yeah.
There you go.
Right. So those, for better or for worse, I mean, I don't think they've been solved in a perfect way, but being a guy that likes narrative in his games, I like that better.
Really?
You really thought the narrative was strong in
Armageddon?
Compared to Guerrilla, dude?
Yeah, but...
The first game was awful, though. Guerrilla was... The narrative was terrible, and it just didn't... I'm with you on that boat. So
Once I got past the point where I was blowing up enough stuff, I was kind of like... It's kind of like Just Cause 2. Where it was like, had a lot of fun flying around, blowing stuff up. And then when I'd actually got the time to play the story, I was like, fuck this.
I mean, well, you're not going to get an argument out of me about Just Cause 2, but I
you are so wrong. Did you read Gaff this last week? You're still wrong. You're still wrong. We are still right.
I'm glad that people like that game. I like when people like things, but,
we love loving things.
I love.
If you never play a story mission in that game, you might actually like it. I'm serious.
Anyway, go on. Armageddon.
While the open world stuff is gone, I do like the fact that every room that you're in sort of feels like a mini sandbox.
Yeah.
So there's like a lot of stuff to blow up and there's a lot of, you know, stuff going on. It's certainly going to turn people off who were really just, I need that open world space. I need to look off in the distance and see some building that I'm going to go drive and blow up.
Right.
That's not really there as much. But the shooting's solid. They give you a lot of cool weapons and tools to use, which are all pretty fun.
I just had a problem with the fact that the tether is by far the most fun thing, and I love that mechanic. Mm-hmm. And it's great when you sling something to something else, and they're way far apart, and they come smashing together, or you sling an enemy, and he goes, "Wah!" You know, it's great. But unfortunately, the game is really kind of committed to its shooteriness. Mm-hmm. And so when there's all these skittery little enemies coming at my ankles, it's just easier to switch to my assault rifle. I don't want to be playing the assault rifle game. I want to be playing the fun physics tether game and fling these guys all around. But at a certain point, it's just like, well, kind of pick one or the other. Don't make me have to play the shooter when you've got all this other fun stuff that I could be doing, which is what the last game was. It was like, just play in this fun sandbox.
Well, and to a certain, I mean, I see that to a certain degree. I do like the nano rebuild thing, mm-hmm. so you can reconstruct parts of the environment that you've destroyed. But yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying in terms of the shooting and, you know, bridging or making that – bridging that gap between blowing stuff up and having a solid shooting mechanic and not having every, you know, tool in your suite actually speak to both sides equally.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I would sort of recommend it as a game good for folks who are like, man, there's nothing out right now.
That's true.
You know, it's sort of a good stopgap.
I definitely had fun with it. Don't get me wrong. It's just in comparison to how much I adore the Guerrilla installment of the franchise, I couldn't help feeling a little sad.
Poor Dan Mason. Gone and somewhat forgotten.
Yeah.
All because you can't remember the plot to Red Faction Guerrilla.
Did you look up the plot?
I'm looking at it right here.
What is
poor,
it?
Poor Dan Mason.
It's about two sentences?
No, it's like seven paragraphs
long. He's a minor.
Long.
I know that. He's a minor. I mean, he's of age, but he's...
You played Alex Mason. He was a mining engineer who shows up in Mars. This part, actually, remember, he shows up and then he meets up with his brother. There's like civil unrest going on. And then early on, his brother gets gunned down by the Earth Defense Forces that are now like trying to take.
That's because that's in the first cutscene of the game.
Yeah. Those used to be your good guys.
There you go.
Well, you
done.
Know. And then there's like some.
And then you blow
unrest.
A lot of stuff up. There's like convoy.
Bridge.
Well, it's a rebel war. It's a rebel war story.
Right.
Right. It's a rebel war story. So that's a plot. That's a plot. You're mad because your brother got killed. So you helped kick the EDF off Mars.
Well, that's a setup. And then the actual, once you get into the game, you're like, all right, let me pull up my map and I'll go to this random waypoint and
do a mission.
Yeah, exactly.
For some reason, yeah.
I actually didn't ever play this game very much other than to do like what we talked about, which is why I liked it, which was drive around and blow shit up and then like play online multiplayer with like the Smash Ship mode. The Smash Ship mode was awesome. That's back, right?
It is. I think you need to actually purchase the game to unlock. I mean, you can buy it separately, but it's one of those code dealies.
Oh. That's the way to go, man. That's fun.
Although it's called Ruin Mode, and it's a timed mode where you basically have a minute or a minute and a half or some ridiculously short amount of time to blow up as much stuff as possible. So
that was like a mission type in Guerrilla.
Yeah. While it's fun, it's like you start one of those things, and I think there's probably like 10 of them. I don't know exactly how many of them there are. There's a handful of them. But once you've done it, you start in the exact same spot every time you replay. So it's like a high score chasing mode where you're blowing up the same stuff in each level that you play, you know.
But multiplayer modes, like, it's hard to distinguish multiplayer modes. Like, we're going to talk now. I mean, might as well throw from there to Uncharted because Billy's into the Uncharted 3 beta. I played a bunch of it, and we were just talking about this yesterday. I shot an episode of Bonus Round, and it was me and Keely and Michael McWhorter and Shane Satterfield, and we were, like, doing face-off of games. And one of the things that came up when we were talking about Uncharted was how much the multiplayer matters. And the competitive multiplayer to me in Uncharted, even still, I'm like, it's great that they can do it. It's great that it doesn't detract from the main game. It's great that they have good ideas with perks and everything, but there's so many games doing that. I just don't need it in Uncharted.
Yeah, but it's fun as shit.
But there's lots of fun.
It's so fun.
Okay, what makes it so much more fun to you than Modern Warfare or Battlefield or...
Because Modern Warfare, I die every 3 seconds. This game, I feel like I actually have a chance.
You die every five?
No, I don't. I actually do pretty well in this game. But it's different. It's a third-person shooter. There's traversal elements. There's more to it. Like, I don't know. I really...
So the beta's out now. There's two levels you can play in the beta, and both of them have the sort of evolving scenery mechanic that they're building into their multiplayer. One of them is the airstrip level, which both of them were in the demo that I talked about a few months ago, where, you know, the airstrip level, it starts off, you're on, and one team is on a cargo plane, and the other team is on chase trucks. And as the chase trucks get close, that team's objective is to try and hop onto the plane and kick the other team off the plane. Whoever's on the plane, when it takes off, starts at one spot of the airfield. The other team arrives at a different part of the airfield, and then it starts. Then the game continues there in the airfield. The other one is a chateau. The chateau level is not quite as in your face with what changes. There's a large part of the center portion of the chateau that collapses partway into the engagement, and then that changes the the architecture that you can play around with inside the building, which, and the building sits in between two play fields. There's like the front yard and the backyard, and there's like ways to go around on the sides, and a lot of times you can go through the middle, but once the floor falls through in the middle of the chateau, it completely changes the dynamic of going through the building. So there you go. So you've been playing it.
You just wrecked it. You wrecked what I was going to say. But when you, okay,
all I did so was all you, I did was describe the thing.
You just destroyed your chateau, dude.
Yes, you did. But one, okay. Well, first thing, when you download the beta, most people that are listening to this haven't, you know, taken part in the press things. There's something that shows up in the lower right hand corner called Uncharted TV, and that actually is always going on in all the menus. And you can pop out that window and make it bigger on the screen, but it'll tell you and explain to you basically what I'm about to say. But a lot of the different nuances that are different from UC3 multiplayer than Uncharted 2. So the first thing that you do when you start a multiplayer game is they have a buddy system. You're always paired up with somebody, which is cool. So like say me and Jeff, one of the Jeffs, are playing the game.
What's the other Jeff supposed to do?
Pick me.
We're shooting. So say me and one of the Jeffs is shooting the other Jeff. The other Jeffs on the other team.
As is known to happen.
This is making this way more confusing than it is. But
a third Jeff enters the room. Yes.
It's kind of a co-op thing, but...
Who do you shoot?
I'll take this Jeff. And so you know, you do like this little, like, you say we both were shooting at somebody, we kill somebody. You high-five them. You do this, like, high-five move, which at first I thought was kind of cheesy.
Kind of?
I was like, oh great, you're broing this game out, but it's really not too bad because you get a medal and some extra cash. So like medals in the game you build up to purchase things. There's a lot, they are throwing so much into this game, which the one thing I will say I'm a little bit concerned about is that they're throwing too much in.
They're definitely throwing a lot into it. I'm curious about how the medal system works in a larger scale test environment. Because the theory that they, as they explained it behind the medal system, is that one of the concerns that they have as they look at other online multiplayer shooters is that it very quickly segregates between an elite class that puts hours and hours into playing, knows maps perfectly, knows where to find people, guns people down, and the guys you always see at the end of the score match with that super high kill to death ratio, mm-hmm. which makes it really hard for anyone, even, you know, like after those first two or three people, to have as much fun with the game if the reward system is only based off of making kills.
Right.
So this medal system, what their expressed idea was to offer other ways to get perks open in the
like
game.
Like high fives,
like right, exploring, but, I mean, like finding
there's
gold, like
friendship. There's treasure chests that you can
friendship
open up to
for
get
the
medals.
Win.
But that, you know, that's the one thing that concerns me, because there's metal kickbacks, which are kind of like perks. There's two different kind of perks in the games. There's boosters that you set up in your loadout that you want, and then there's kickbacks. So like say you kill 12 guys and you get an auto, you can fire off your kickback and you automatically get an RPG, which obviously the guys,
kickbacks are powerful.
Yeah, they're super powerful. But like, and that concerns me, because the guy that's got the high kill death ratio is going to rack up 12 kills really quick or get 12 medals really quick. You know, so it depends on how you play it, but it is balanced. So if your team is getting their asses kicked in a team based game, you'll get like double damage or, you know, little helper things, kind of like what Call of Duty does when you're sucking.
Well,
so
I actually kind of liked that idea too, the whole like team advantage system. So like when you're down, have you gotten into a match where your team was really down and it kicked into like, you know, like insta-death mode for the other team for a while?
Yes, right before we got here. That we were just in a shit match.
Yeah, so if your team's really getting beat, it handicaps so that the other team doesn't just completely run away with the score.
That's interesting.
It's kind of an interesting
rubber
idea.
Banding for FPSs.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're talking about modes, you know, obviously they do have like team deathmatch. They've got deathmatch or free for all. They do a three team deathmatch. So it's 2-on-2-on-2. But the one thing that I really liked, they had co-op arena. And originally I thought it was just horde mode. So you just sit there and shitloads of enemies just keep coming at you. But what they do is they have that, but there's also objectives. So like in Plunder, where you have to take the gold, you know, the treasure, and bring it back to a certain area. Like, that'll be one of the objectives that you have to do with your team. And there's only three people playing. You'll have to survive onslaughts and, also capture a waypoint and protect that for a certain amount of time. So at least it gives it – it's a little twist on – I mean, there are multiplayer modes that we're used to, but at least it's adding something a little different. It's making it, you know, a little unique. So I don't know. I've really had a lot of fun with it. They are patching the shit out of it. They've already patched it once.
Wow, that was fast.
But it's not open to the public yet. Right now, it's only open. Well, I guess it is kind of open to the public.
It's basically open because everyone was Plus. Technically.
Well, I'm sure when they planned this out, they weren't planning on PSN to shit the bed, you know, and they had dates.
No, but
and
it's,
stuff,
it's
so.
You know, it's great for them because they're going to get a fantastic player sample out of this and have all sorts of great data to wrap up their balancing as they head towards their launch date. I mean, that actually works out fine for them and great for also
right.
server
oh, sure.
loading.
Sure. And they need it because, I mean, graphically, it's a big upgrade from two. I think it's a big upgrade from two, at least from what I've seen on the lighting and everything like that. But the matches so far started, like when I played yesterday, it was a little rough. Today, a lot better. It's a
good.
Lot cleaner.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not down on it per se. It's a very weird point that I'm trying to articulate that I guess I haven't even fleshed out completely enough in my own mind of there are so many games competing in this space already that although it does lots of cool things, I'm just... And it's not to and they, look, they've proven it doesn't take away from their single player development. They've done a great single player development in two. I have no worries whatsoever about the single player development of three. Maybe they just could have done something different. I don't know. I mean, I look at like Assassin's Creed Brotherhood and the creative take that they put on multiplayer. I really like that, the assassination thing. Or maybe they could have done something else in co-op play because, you know, like I think the game really lends itself with its strong characters in addition to,
this is not a co-op.
And
they had
co-op
in two.
And they have co-op coming in this.
Yeah.
So... And they have co-op coming in this. Well, maybe they just could have done more with it. I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there. It's not, it's weird because... It is really fun to play. It is quite good. The airfield is great.
Yeah, it was when you're. It looks like it. I mean, it's totally straight out of Indiana Jones. There's army trucks chasing after a plane, and you're jumping between the army trucks to get on the plane, or even if you're on the plane, you can jump off the plane to get on these army trucks. It's crazy. Like the first time I saw this, I'm like, and I hadn't seen it before. I was like, holy shit, really? Like a moving field. Like,
but what about the fact that it doesn't matter?
What that whoever gets on the plane,
it just doesn't matter.
It doesn't. Right? Who cares? It's fun.
Okay. You that know, that's like, the that is totally
the
argument.
Thing. Like I didn't think Uncharted 2 needed multiplayer, and then I played it. And I'm like, this is fucking fun. I really enjoyed this, and I played the hell out of it. And this is taking that even further. And one other completely totally different thing about the UC3 beta, I was messing around with the options, and a lot of games don't do this, but for audio options, I'm kind of an audio whore, you know, for like surround sound. But they've got DTS 5.1, Dolby Digital 5.1, they've got TCM 5.1 and 7.1. Like they,
good
like,
God, they're crazy.
They're
of course.
Totally
they're sound
hardcore,
design.
But it's awesome and it's it sounds amazing. So
especially when the kids are cussing at you, you get to hear it all around.
It's yes. PSN, dude. You don't have to hear anybody.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. Nobody.
How
has
long it. Is that going to last?
But download.
What is the chatter like? Do you find many people with a voice on?
Last night, I finally found a game that people are actually playing well, but today it was all just bad. Today it was poor.
But are there a lot of voices?
Not as much. Fortunately, yes, but I was just hearing, wasn't like, because when you're paired up and you have a buddy, you want to be able to talk to your buddy to be able to like, hey, high five me
was
over
it
here.
Making
hey,
a sandwich, mom?
Friendship.
It was
high five.
It was not good.
That left me.
And usually, you know, PS3, and I've said this before on the show, but usually PS3 has a better breed of people talking, you know, and not so far in UC3. But I think that's because it's just open to everybody.
I have a really important question, though. If you fist bump or high five, do you get a little sound thing like, yeah, bitches? Or?
I think it goes ka-ching.
Yeah, great.
We don't get any ka-chings in Dungeon Siege 3, but you can multiplayer that, which seems to be maybe a savior for the game, because I'm really torn having... I've spent like 2.5 hours on this game now, and...
I've spent about a little over double that, and I'm still torn, probably for a similar reason.
People keep telling me, stick with it, and you know, if you followed like the stuff I talk about much, you know I love action role-playing games, especially loot-whoring action role-playing games. I'm playing Katrina. Which character are you playing?
I am playing Anjali.
Oh, that's the flaming crazy
the fire
bitch.
Chick, yeah.
Yeah, so you have like fire and ranged magic attacks plus a spear.
Right.
And I have guns.
Yeah.
Guns?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of guns in
fantasy long range games. And short range.
Oh, said the guy who loves Torchlight.
Yeah, and that's actually one of my not. You know what? Actually, whenever I get a chance to have a bow or like a crossbow, I always switch to that. Remember, yeah. my Torchlight character, which I'm so close to finishing my Xbox Live playthrough on, she's wielding like this crazy purple crossbow that's awesome. And I look at guns that are maybe slightly better. I'm like, nah, I'm going to keep my crossbow. It's way more. It's way cooler. It just has more panache. There's that's a good word, huh? Panache,
yeah.
You like that? I threw that in there for you.
I appreciate that. Panache for your blunderbuss.
Plump panache for your, wow. So coming at it from a person who loves to play ranged characters in those games, the continuing problem I have with console iterations of these games, and I want to fire it up on PC and see if that solves part of this, is right. that I have yet to find one of these games that does a good job of doing ranged combat in console controls, because none of them allow you to do the equivalent of what you do in a PC game of hold the space bar to plant your character where they are and let them fire away. Because ranged characters, I don't want to close on enemies. I want to stay as far away as possible and pick as many of them off before I have to start kiting them. And the way all of the console games solve this is that, well, when you start firing, your character stops. But that means that when you're not firing and trying to aim, you're actually moving towards the enemies that you're trying to stay away from and shoot. It's stupid.
No, that's a problem with the game.
But it's a problem in all of these games. I mean, even Torchlight to a degree has that, although it's pretty quick to click lock to what your target is. Someone's got to let go of that control scheme and give me the ability to like pull a trigger or press a bumper, hold me where I am, and then fire and shoot so I can, you know, fire, shoot, move, retreat, fire, shoot, move, retreat, use my spells, kite. I mean, kiting is a key to playing those characters, and you can't do it well on consoles. Silly.
It's also, and the local co-op I played a little bit of, it's a little claustrophobic in terms of the camera angle, how much it pulls back. You find yourself in, especially in really heated battles, oftentimes pulling the screen in opposite directions, and then you end up with, you know, it'll only expand so far.
Oh, it doesn't do the smart tear?
It doesn't, no.
You know, now that someone has done smart tearing on screens, everybody is going to have to do that, because that's the new way to do local co-op if you don't have that Sony television where you can, you know, shutter glass it. Which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do you know, smart tearing like that. I think the game's really pretty.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
It's weird, the camera decisions.
Yeah, yeah, very weird. Well, I mean, I find the on the ground combat stuff to be fun for the most part. Your ranged character
borked.
Yeah, stuff aside, like the character that I'm playing is actually fun to play. But the fantasy and the fiction surrounding it.
What about coming to Kingdom of Ebb?
Well, okay. But Ebb is like the actually only pronounceable word or location or place.
It's how many apostrophes?
Everything's got like, looks like it's translated from Icelandic or it's got an extra K or a couple extra Y's.
The fiction is sort of funny.
Let's call it Umlaut City.
It is pretty funny. It does sort of pretend itself very grandiose in its fiction and then give you a bunch of, wow, like, did someone in middle school write this?
Right. Yeah, it's sort of inconsistent. I mean, there's a lot of dialogue, a lot of lore, a lot of stuff to find in the world, but for the most part, I'm not finding too much of that. You want me to kill a spider. Okay, I'm done. I'm going.
It's
I'm
not
off.
Like the Dungeon Siege series had strong lore.
Actually, Dungeon Siege 2's story was pretty solid. It was pretty well, I actually liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, okay.
I would give you Dungeon Siege 1, where it was like, you're the farmer, and he picks up stuff, and like becomes
and you
a
go
hero.
Forward, and forward, there's danger.
Not nearly as
but,
good.
But like the dialogue stuff, I don't need dialogue choice in Dungeon Siege 3.
So when you're blowing up the convoy and the bridge, it tells you there's a backstory?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. But for me, it ultimately boils down to, in these games, is the you know, moment-to-moment combat, mm-hmm. and what do I get out of it gear-wise. So two things that really are sort of slowing me down on it. Number one is the camera thing, mm-hmm. which is that it only has two layers of zoom. You just click the stick and you get two layers of zoom. I want to see if in the PC version here also, again, I could scroll in closer.
Right, that'd be interesting.
Because you can tell the details there in the character model. Mm-hmm. Like at first I was like, oh, well, it's not even modeling like my new gear. And then I realized I got some nicer gear. Oh, it's actually putting new gear on me. I'm just even zoomed in. I'm not zoomed in enough to see it. Right. Yeah, I want the fucking fashion show. I'm sorry. And there's no like good character model in the inventory screen. And the inventory screens are weird. Like the whole layout of it is it's like, come on. Like these games have been made before. There's no reason to reinvent the manner in which you handle simple stuff like inventory and inventory control and specs and all that kind of stuff. Just make it simple and straightforward.
And you spend a lot of time in the menus.
One thing I do like is that you can tap the D-pad and go straight to equip stuff. So you find something, tap the D-pad, go straight to the equip thing. And then the other thing is, I expect games like this, unless they're super tactics heavy, to be very heal friendly. And maybe it's from having played a lot of Torchlight. I expect to be like running around blowing off heal spells and tapping potions, you know, all the time. There's no heal mechanic in this game.
Well, there is, but it's usually tied to one of your abilities.
It's weird.
Okay, well, so the fire character that I have can lay down this, you know, circumference of fire that basically you can upgrade to either damage enemies more or heal you and your companions more while it's active. So you have a choice when you're upgrading the power, which, you know, where to
Since
throw,
you're on
throw
that,
your points.
By the way, there are a lot of really cool ideas embedded in this game, and that's one of the coolest ones, is that the skill development tree is split all the way down to where not only do you pick what skill you want to improve, but you pick an aspect of it, and you're never going to be able to do all of them. So you have to really tailor your character the way you want them to play.
Right.
So like, say I have a long shot ability, I can either make it to where if the long shot hits, then it returns a part of the focus energy it takes to use it, or that it has a chance of ricocheting. And I can apply only 5 upgrades to that skill. So I can choose all 5 of one, or I can split between the two and sort of go for balanced. And I have to decide, like, how do I want the character to play with that skill?
And whether
that's cool.
Yeah, and whether you're playing co-op or not will actually sort of make one decision seem more appropriate than the other. Like, you don't really need to be super heavy on the healing stuff if you're by yourself. Just a couple little things, and vice versa if you're with
a group. Then the healing thing is weird.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is. It is weird. And actually, the first time I was playing it, it took me a while to figure out how to actually heal my character. And I have not played as the warrior character. I have not played as the
I'm probably going to do sword and board in the PC version, I think.
I don't know how their healing stuff works, but I think the gun chick has, Katarina or whatever her name is, has...
Katarina.
She's got some sort of nondescript Middle Eastern European accent. I don't know where she's from.
She's from Northern Ebb.
She's from the Ketterwald.
That, right, yes.
Or some nonsense.
The edge of Ebb.
So it's all tied into this idea of having a ability to power up your character, which they don't ever really explain why or how, but as you cause damage and do blocks, you build like this little bitty gem that you would miss if you looked at the UI. It's like way down in the lower left-hand corner. But once you build it up, you can either use that power to power up your next attack, or if you're in blocking mode, you can use it to heal yourself.
Right.
And that, like, evidently, I guess there's no potions in this world, because I haven't run across any.
It's all ability-based. You've got a little mana bar that fuels all these, like, you know, spells and
but
stuff.
But you're still soaking up a shit ton of damage. And so their answer for not having mana bars is the old, well, when you kill things, it drops little orbs of health. So I kill a goblin, and then I go over to where the goblin died, because there's a little green floating orb of health, because, of course, goblins give me health. It's kind of weird.
Well,
I don't know.
I hope you criticize Diablo 3 for that same thing when it comes out. Shit's in that game, too.
I got
torchlights
potions
all
in that
potions,
game.
Right?
Torchlights all potions. Yeah. It's, well, potions and spells. Heal spells.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
So, I mean, end of the day, bottom line, I like the looting combat stuff, especially co-op. It's pretty fun. It's, you know, does that as well as any sort of dungeon crawler. Environments are pretty varied. Like, they get more and more varied as you go. So that's good. Not a fan of some of the presentational stuff, like the cinematic dialogue sequences. Well, I just think those character models are not meant to be looked at that
way. They're a hell of a lot better than some of the ones I've seen in other games.
Well, fair enough. But
I didn't find them distracting. They do the BioWare thing where you come to characters and speak to them, and you make choices based off of 2 or 3 or 4 dialogue options of how you want to talk to them. I haven't seen whether that actually plays out any sort of, you know, reputation play down the road. I'm going to play the game more. So, I mean, one of the things that's funny, actually, and if I sound sour, I'm not nearly as sour as I sound. The game's really, like, starting to get to me. It's Charlie Sinesi told me like this. He's like, dude, it's a really slow burn. It's going to take a while to get into it. It really is. And part of that is the very intro to the game, the tutorial section is how do you do a tutorial and screw it up? Well, they did a tutorial and screwed it up to the extent that it's giving you tutorial messages, and it gives you tutorial messages in the middle of combat, and it doesn't freeze the game. It doesn't keep the tutorial message on the screen, and they fly by so fast you can hardly read them. They're also anchored to points in the world. So, like, there were times where I'd be exploring this mansion that you're in at the beginning, and I'd see, like, the edge of a tutorial message, and I'd spin to look at it because it's anchored over here to this item in the world that they thought I would be at by then. And I'm like, oh, shit, there's a... And there's no way to go back and see him. Like, that's genius. And, of course, it's the era of no manuals, so there's no manual to look at either. I'm not opposed to the no manual thing. I'm just opposed to, like, teach me how to play your game. Show me how to play your game so I get it. Explain to me why I'm healing myself with power-up through like defeating things instead of using potions.
The first hour of that game in general is pretty rough, just because you do, I mean, as wonky as that tutorial stuff is, you get done with that and you're immediately going out to a town to collect a crap ton of quests.
Yep.
And so it's really a while before you get into a situation where you're like, okay, I'm gonna go here and kill this and get some loot, and then I'm gonna go over here and kill this and get some loot. It's like, okay, let me go talk to all these mothers and see what they want, you know, like
it's a town of mothers.
But they're
grumble.
They're heavy Europeans.
Please save my child.
And then during the last hour playing it last night, I really started enjoying it. Like during the last hour last night, I finally got past all of that stuff, and I was at the point where I was just running out, doing quests, taking on enemies, finding loot, going back to the store, selling stuff, and it was starting to click. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? Like, this is a case example of you've got to do a great job of in this type of game, showing me how to play it, and then helping me understand the way the systems work. Because one of the things that's great, like, not thinking about Torchlight again, is right off the bat, you understand how all the game systems work. You understand the health mechanic, you understand the mana mechanic, you understand the pet mechanic, the selling stuff, the whole nine yards, it all comes together.
It's not just that type of game. It's any game. It's the first hour or two sucks.
It's tough.
That's not good. That's a fail. That is a fail on the developer.
Yeah. Well, no fails on indie developers, because they don't have more than an hour or two to get across their point in their games. And when we come back on the other side, Indie Jeff is up to bat with a smorgasbord, as we called it, of indie games. All that and more when We Can Confirm is back.
We Can Confirm? You know how it works.
No, I don't know how it works.
Dots.
Hit him over and over, sort of.
Dots.
You were wanting us over those dots.
You know how it works.
No, I don't know how it works.
Hit him over and over, sort of. Dots.
Dude, you were hauling us over those dots.
Dots.
They're a ghost of us.
Dots.
How do you wake them up?
Do they tell you going to do
dots?
How do you wake them up?
Do they tell you going to do dots?
We Can Confirm.
It's real good.
It's
really powerful.
We Can Confirm.
It's real good.
It's
really powerful.
Yeah, it works.
No, I don't know how it works. Dots only appear in certain places.
Dots.
Grab a power pellet and
rock it through that.
Dots.
We Can Confirm.
It's real good. It's bad.
We Can Confirm.
We Can Confirm.
That is We Can Confirmed with Pac-Man. Thanks, Del Rio. Hope you're enjoying your birthday vacation. We're ready to enjoy some indie games, so I turn the floor over to Indie Jeff.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun.
Well, let's probably good to start with the Journey beta, because that's probably the one that's on most people's radar.
Definitely.
And I know, Jeff, you've played it a little bit.
I played it
before. Oh, and Garden played it too. Okay, great. So I played last night, downloaded, played through talking to you guys, is ostensibly what you guys played through.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opening section of the game. Probably, I don't know, I guess I played for a little less than an hour, but it wasn't like I was, you know, it's not the kind of game where you rush from objective to objective.
You didn't really know what the objectives are.
Exactly. So in that respect, it's pretty awesome. It does a very good job of communicating about the world and about the character and about your surroundings and what you're supposed to do without actually giving you any instruction, which is really neat.
Therein lies the beauty of Journey to me, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That first of all, there's just this amazing – I was chatting with Dylan over email about it, Cuthbert from Hue, and he like articulated what I've thought about it so well. Is like there's this incredible sense of vista right off the beginning of the game. So you see this huge expanse stretching in front of you, and that sense of vista translates into come run in me. It's like right. It beckons to you. It's like, yeah. I want to go, just go. I just want to go. And then the game picks up from there with its you know, locomotion and flight systems of which I'm trying not to spoil.
Right, yeah. Well, and part that's the other thing. Talking about this game is really hard because discovery is such a big thing.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to, like, even describe, you know, the jumping mechanic.
But then I thought about it, you know, and you know that vista thing? If you think about it as you play through the game, it really plays with that, whereas you get into some areas, it pulls down that field of view, and you're in a concentrated area, but then you'll come over a sand dune, and it's right back to wide open again, and it's just saying, okay, run again.
And how awesome is it that, like, Flower, you... instead of using the right analog stick to turn, you tilt the controller to actually look around the world.
You can sort of use a little combination of both.
Oh, do you use the? I was exclusively using the tilt controls.
Interesting. Is the right stick active in this beta as a camera control?
I want to say, okay, this is like a 95% sure, because hearing you guys say this, I'm not 100%, but that's my natural instinct, is to go to the right stick. And I remember doing that at the beginning, it not working, and then just defaulting. And I don't think I ever went back to the stick, just because I was like, oh, I'm going to look around now.
So when I got the demo over at Sony Santa Monica, it was with Robin and Genova from that game company. And that very topic came up. They addressed it to us and said, you know, what do you think of this? Because they have a big debate running right now between the, you know, like the creative spark purity thing of, well, we want, like, this is the way, using the controller to manipulate the field of view is the way we want to do it creatively for the experience, versus everybody's played games with controllers and they know to use the right stick. Which way should we go? Should we include right stick or should we not include right stick? I'm of a mind also don't include the right stick, because I think it's integral to the way you play it, that it just engages you, it gets you involved. But there's a large number of them, obviously, like the studio split.
Right.
This is a tough question.
Well, the game invokes imagination and like, you know, wonder and stuff. And so asking you to manipulate the controller in a way that you don't traditionally do is totally in bounds, in my opinion. Well, like, I think it's a really good idea.
What's so wonderful about it, and the same thing with Flower, is it harkens back to a more innocent idea of what play is. Mm-hmm. You know, we are all playing these games, but this is like a sort of very visceral play. It's just, you're just in this environment. It's like the world's biggest sandbox. You're a child again. You don't really understand. You don't really know what is beyond the next dune. You're just kind of running around. And the same thing with Flower, where it's like, it's this big grass field and you can just sort of glide across it, and it's childlike and wondrous, and
you're sipping jasmine tea and blowing a joint. It's all great.
Hippies, goddamn hippies.
That's another game that doesn't tell you
exactly,
okay, fly over here and do this. It's like, it's, you just get into there,
plops you into that situation. It's this sort of magical feeling, and you just play. You just experience the wonder of that environment as something that you might have done as a kid when you were plopped into a sandbox, and you know, and I know that sounds really silly,
and yet it's not objective free.
Dude, like, right. you realize I was joking, because I completely agree with you. I mean, yeah. Everyone knows that I agree. Everyone knows that I love Flower and I love this game, and right. It's for exactly those
$200 for Flower.
I would pay. I stand by that. The people who make fun of me, I stand by that 100%, because that experience to me was well worth that. It's just it is. It's very emotionally freeing, or not even emotionally, like just spiritually, like you're just into it. Like, you get into it and you're just there. I do sort of wish that, but you know, like Flower was so much like that, and then maybe this will have some of that. I wish Flower had more just go and fly around and explore the space sort of thing to it. You know,
like, you could play it that way.
I was always
racking up scores or anything. It was relaxing. Like, it just, yeah. You're just kind of,
The
music is great, but it's just moving the controller a little bit left to right, you know. Just,
but there were elements that weren't relaxing to it, especially toward the end.
When you get to the levels, like the, yeah, like
there's
the
danger
really
involved.
Bad part of your dream.
Well, and it really triggered my flower blooming OCD. Like, I was like, I gotta get all those little guys.
Oh yeah, and if you do a loop and you miss a couple of petals, yeah. And you're like, I gotta get back to this. Ah, yeah. Crap!
Making another pass.
Yeah. Yeah, that can be frustrating.
Maybe that's just me.
No,
I'm right there with you, man.
I played
Pac-Man. I'm got to get them all.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that there is a lessened emphasis in the part that's at least able to play right now in Journey, and then a greater emphasis on running around in the environment and discovery of spaces in the environment and exploring and finding out what you can do and learning what your capabilities are just by playing around in the world.
Okay,
and maybe it's an early part of the game.
So I want to ask you guys, because I, you know, granted, I got home last night, installed it, fired it up, played for an hour.
Yeah.
But I didn't run into anyone else during my initial adventure.
And might
I know
happen.
That, yeah. No, I know that that's what they're saying. I'm just wondering, did you guys encounter anybody?
Yeah, but I think we were, at least I know that in my play session, we were set up to specifically else there.
Actually, if you played it over here at Sony Santa Monica, you weren't really set up to play it with somebody. You just happened to be playing during the time that beta testing was going on down at San Diego, because they don't have control over who you play with.
Crazy.
Because I was actually there playing at the same time as Halverson was, and when we were talking to Genova afterwards, I initially was a little derailed, because he's talking about stuff and I'm like, that didn't happen in the game we were playing. And finally I said, wait, don't you remember when this happened and I walked over here to this fountain of ribbons and like he's like, no, that didn't happen. And that was when Janelle was like, well, we don't actually control. We have no control over who you were playing with. It's like whenever you play, it's you know, simply put together by where you are, what's going on in the world, and whether or not your play session at that moment is intermeshable with another play session. Then we just put you together.
And there's no chat. There's no way to communicate except through the game world with the other player.
And again, that's another aspect that I feel is very childlike. It's very much you just are simpatico with this other creature that's in the same environment, and you. By virtue of being there together and not being able to communicate other than by doing, you're sort of just link up and become.
Until you run into that one character who starts drawing F-bombs in the sand.
That's what I was like. That's like, I'm sure they figured this out, how not to make someone draw dicks, but like.
No, it doesn't. It's not set up that way. At least from what I saw, the sand mechanic, while it does really cool stuff and flows under your feet and there's ways to interact with it, it's not like you can draw.
It's anti-penis sand.
Yeah. Very smart choice.
They actually, when I was talking to Genova about that, he was
don't figure it out.
They are constantly running play tests with observing people playing together because they're wanting to pull out anything that brings in that
penis,
that competitive animosity, aka the penis part. Yes,
right.
Anything that brings that testosterone fueled part into it, because that's not what it's about.
Right,
that's counterproductive to the whole idea of going on this journey together. And I really love the idea of it being a journey together, sort of this like pilgrimage thing.
So you can't play with your friends.
You cannot play with your friends.
You can play at the same time,
but you'll.
But don't worry, Billy. There'll be time for high fives and other multiplayer experiences.
Thank God, high five in
the
sand.
I'd like to make friends in a game like that, though. If you could figure out who you were playing with, and maybe not by their gamer tag, maybe not necessarily communicate with them in game, but go, you know, I had a really cool experience playing with this person.
Just like, one day, you get a letter in the mail with a picture in it.
And I said the same thing.
So you played with the whole time.
Some dude in prison. Some dude in prison.
And I said the same thing. And the undeniable point about it is that if there is any sort of mechanic like that, then all of the extra baggage that goes with it comes back on and gets reattached.
No, you're right.
Whereas this is completely free of that. No matter what happens, you know that the experience you have with this person is just the experience you have with that person, and then that's it.
It's the,
as Luke said, when we were like
the hole in the side,
it's glory hole gaming.
Glory hole gaming.
But like, there's something very liberating in it about it in this case, where there's, you know, I mean, it's obviously a different sort of thing.
Well, I think the second you had two people Bluetoothing together, you'd ruin the experience.
Oh,
like it would just, yeah.
Absolutely.
Hence the name Journey.
Oh, I thought you meant Bluetooth.
Don't stop believing.
That's right.
So I guess you want to move on to another indie here?
Yes, sir. It's
all right. Let's
Indie Jeff.
Let's move on a little bit. I was playing a really great indie strategy game called Frozen Synapse. It's on Steam, $25, by a developer named Mode 7, and it's a tactical strategy game that basically imagine the beginning of old Rainbow Six games or with the planning stages where you basically plot the route for your guys through, you know, some sort of overhead map, and then when you execute the mission, they would, you know, your AI-controlled guys would go out and do that. Well, in this case, you are the tactician, and you're basically commanding a little squad of soldiers against the AI. The kick is that unlike normal strategy games where you go and your opponent goes, this is a situation where you give all your guys a series of commands, tell them which way to face, how to fire, how long to wait in certain areas, and then you hit execute, and everyone moves at once. And
the computer just sims the outcome.
Yeah.
This sounds like so right up my alley. There's a couple of board games that do this. One called Robo Rally that's really popular. That sort of you do this programming mechanic. You really like physically program your moves, right?
Yes.
Right. Without knowing exactly what your opponent's going to do, and then you just see what happens.
That's
fascinating and awesome to me.
Yeah, that's very very much what
it was.
It
was pretty fascinating and awesome to Zav the first time I watched him play it, as he like laid out his team on one side of this. I guess it's like a multi-room house, and the you could see little red dots on the other side, and he pressed go, and all of his little blue dots disappeared. It was like, dead, dead, dead.
So did he find it frustrating?
Well, I think that he hopped into it very quickly.
Well,
but it did illustrate that you don't just like, oh, look, here's a spot and here's a cover spot. I'll just have this guy run across here, because he'd like run across there and someone would see him in their field of view, and they're like, opportunity fire, boom, you're dead.
And the tutorial is fairly complete, but it goes by fast enough that it's just enough to get yourself killed a lot. Like you feel
all
just
right,
confident
cadet,
enough.
We're gonna
to
give
like,
you just enough to die out there.
Yeah. Go have fun. Yeah. So that's a lot of my subsequent play sessions have been spent really messing around with a single type of mechanic. So, you know, you're setting waypoints for your guys, and that's pretty standard. But each waypoint that you set can have a whole host of different little subset commands. So you can have your guy stand or duck or focus on an enemy or, you know, set a command so that when he's going from point A to point B, he will or won't stop and engage the enemy if he sees them. It's kind of important if your guy has a shotgun, guy across the room has an assault rifle, and he sees you and you see him, you don't want your dude stopping because the range on his weapon is just going to get him killed. Mm. And I mean, even to the point where you're at a waypoint, you can pull out a little clock out of the waypoint and say, okay, guy, wait 2 seconds here before moving to your next waypoint. So even though you're only commanding three guys, it really quickly becomes, okay, I just set this guy up. Is he facing the right direction at this waypoint, going to this way? So you really have to want to pay a lot of attention. It's very meticulous. There's a lot of detail and things you can do, commands you can give your guys. And to be effective at it, I'm still not great at it. Like I can get through missions usually after one or two tries, you know,
sounds
trial
like
and error.
Tons of replayability.
Does it have multiplayer?
It does, and this is the great thing about multiplayer is that, and I didn't even realize this because I've only dabbled in one match, but I fired up and I'm playing single player. I get a couple of invites that pop up in game. So and so wants to play a match with you, and you can say yes and go right to it, or say no, I'm going to stay here and mess around. Well, those missions, my turn was still waiting for me, so I had a couple of multiplayer requests that I'd accepted. And I went back to the main menu, and it's like, okay, you want to play a turn in this game.
Because it's all async.
Yeah. So you can basically queue up your turn, set up all your dudes.
Dude, this needs to be on iPad.
Send it back to the
it would be great for
the
iPad.
Other guy. And
I'm
you know.
Sure they're working on that.
I'm thinking about how much I enjoyed Hunters, yeah. Thanks to your recommendation.
Yeah.
And
iPad would be a perfect fit for this game.
I could see myself soaking, like especially like laying in bed before going to sleep for the night. Like, oh, I got to catch up on my turns. Mm-hmm. I would totally do that.
I gotta very, I very try good. This game too. It sounds like something I would love.
So that's Frozen Synapse.
Frozen Synapse.
My only balk there is $25 is kind of expensive.
Is there a demo or anything?
You know, I'm not 100% sure on that. I would venture to say that there probably is. It's a big enough game, but I couldn't swear by that.
Steam.
Especially when you got Atom Zombie Smasher for only $10.
Yes.
Only $10, Atom Zombie Smasher. Which, if you don't know about this game, is freaking rad.
Yeah. Also, is that available on iPad? Because that's another game that would be great for iPad.
I don't think so. That's a Steam thing also.
Yeah.
Because you're controlling all the like landing spots with mouse.
Yeah, yeah. It's like
I guess you could tap on it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's another top-down.
I will ask the iPad while you describe.
Okay. So it's a top...
Hello, computer.
Atom Zombie Smasher, Blendo Games developer. It's a top-down another top-down strategy game. This one's real-time. And each map presents you with a area of a city, so like a square area of a city. And you've got a few entry points that are marked where these zombies will enter. And then you've got all these little yellow dots representing people, you know, walking around the streets. And the first thing you start out with is a helicopter. So basically you have to pick a place to land the helicopter so that you just click. The helicopter will come in once the game starts and the zombies will come in. And so the people are scrambling to get to the helicopter. You're loading people up and taking them to rescue and then bringing the helicopter back to a different safe zone and trying to gather as many people as you can before the rest of them get turned into the undead. Hmm. The kick is that in subsequent levels, you get, you know, extra units that you can place. So you get a unit that you can put that can fire an artillery strike every once in a while that'll blow up a whole big swath of zombies. Or you can get a commando team that you can... You know, you can set in certain parts that'll cover certain city streets so that when zombies come in there, you can see them taking them out with their assault rifles. You know, bigger weapons get unlocked later on, so you're actually destroying, you know, full city blocks and stuff. But very cool. You know, it's a $10 game, but it's pretty addictive.
Sounds almost like certain levels of StarCraft 2, you know, when you had to like evacuate the people from the.
Yeah, there's definitely some similar. Yeah, because it's very much an evacuation game. It's like.
Or the last guy.
Or the last guy. Yes. So, anyway, that is Adam Zombie Smasher.
Which is a ton of fun.
I want to hear about Jamestown, because I heard a lot of buzz about
that. This game is bizarre sounding.
Yeah.
Truly bizarre
steampunk,
sounding.
Yeah, it's bullet hell shooter, right?
17th century British colonial Mars is the setting.
Again.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
With heavy Euros.
Yeah, bullet hell shooter. Very, very well designed. A lot of different difficulty levels, so... You know, it's accessible to people who are like, man, maybe I should try a bullet hell shooter once. All the way up to the people who are like, okay, let me see if this is really hard. It can be very, very difficult. Beautiful art. And the kick, I guess the hook, is that it's 4-player co-op. So it's a bullet hell shooter, 4-player co-op. I guess the one problem is that it's local co-op.
On your PC.
On your PC only. It's a Steam title.
I remember those days when I was a kid. Okay, Summer I'll games. Get A and Z.
Yep.
You get
now.
It
the does.
Arrow
it does
keys.
Work very well with the gamepad.
Yeah.
In fact, that's probably how I'd recommend people play it, just because of it's typical bullet hell. I mean, I guess if you're versed in playing those things on a keyboard, more power to you.
Have they talked about adding online co-op to it?
Not to my knowledge. Mm. But again, it would be. I you know, it's a game that I see and I'm surprised.
That would be really tricky to do online, though.
Yeah, probably, because lag would...
Any bit of lag would totally totally kill it. Yeah. But
so the co-op is only local, which is a shame because it's like very prominent. I'm looking at the game page right now, and it's Jamestown, Legend of the Lost Colony. And it looks really cool.
It would be amazing as a stand-up arcade unit.
Yeah, it would. It really would. Well, and there's different ships you can pick. So the ships have different, super weapons. So the first one's like a beam weapon, and the second one's like a beam weapon that you can aim independently of your of your craft and stuff. It's pretty cool. I mean, there's a lot of variety, but if the art is this 8-bit retro, you're the first level, you're flying over colonial Mars or whatever, and you see all these robot creatures and stuff trying to attack, and then you see the colonists, and they look like little British dudes with rifles, and they're shooting at them and stuff down on the ground. It's
cool.
That's pretty neat. Little storybook.
Little of that goes a long way, I think. Any kind of unique take.
Definitely unique. Looking at the screenshots, definitely.
If it's 4-player co-op, though, friendly fire?
No, friendly fire.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be.
That's the 7th level of bullet hell.
Mm-hmm.
That would be.
Goddamn friends.
$10. It's available on Steam, Direct-to-Drive, and Gamer's Gate.
Yes.
So they have good distribution. You can get around pretty much any place.
Indeed. I should probably give a shout out to The Cat in the Coup, which is a game that...
You love that game.
I do, but it's free on Steam now. So
it's free?
It's free on Steam now.
So loves you back now.
Go play it. Take you 15, 20 minutes. It's awesome. Beautiful. So I guess the next game I want to talk about is Grand Prix Story. I'm playing it on my Android.
Android exclusively.
Exclusively. So
from the makers of
Game Dev Story and Hot Spring Story, which unfortunately is not very good.
Shut up. Hot Spring Story is fun. And if you really like the Japanese shit,
it's fun. It's fun-ish. Yeah.
It's very kitschy. But anyway, sorry.
No, that's okay. So, Grand Prix Story from the makers of Game Dev Story. You basically run your own, race car unit or race car outfit. So you hire mechanics and you hire a race car driver and you're upgrading you're researching your vehicles and upgrading your cars and their individual parts. And, eventually you get to the point where you can have multiple crews. So you've got, one set of mechanics working on upgrading your V6 engine. You've got another set of mechanics that are researching a new car. The cool part about it though is, because all that upgrading stuff is, Game Dev Story familiar, people are familiar with that. But when you go to the actual races, it takes you to the race and you actually watch your car do a lap around the track competing against the other little characters.
It's
kind of
like
stuff.
Sitting at the ballpark and rooting for red to beat blue.
It is. It is a little bit. Yeah. But you can see them when they take a really good turn, they'll get some extra research. You can see your driver go,
I didn't notice that there.
Billy, the red blue thing, that's like when the sausages race. I know you might know, but
that I got
go kielbasa.
Now everything makes sense.
It's also the whole thing plays in landscape, so you don't have to play it like Game Dev Story, which was just straight up and down. It's really nice. It's a great strategy game. A lot of depth to it. Garnet, you totally love it.
I know. That's why I haven't installed it, because I just don't know when the hell I would play this game. I'm like so overloaded with stuff to play right now.
I want Sausage Race Story now.
Sausage Race Story?
They need to get on
Sausage Race Story.
They need to talk to the Milwaukee Brewers and get on that shit.
Yeah, if Kairosoft makes it for $5, I'll buy it.
And I'm worried because I also installed, because of the dangerous influence of Russ Frushtick, Tiny Tower.
Ooh.
Have you seen that?
I have not.
I'm worried about this. So it reminds me of like Ute's Tower. Remember the old where you build like the old like Sim Tower thing? Wasn't it Ute's?
The two Utes.
I'll look that up while we're discussing. I think my mind is on the right track here. But you like building a tower and outfitting it with different shops and attractions to bring people into your tower to make it more profitable to build your bigger tower. You looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm going to look it up while Jeff talks about Wasteland Angel.
Yes, Wasteland Angel. So this is a game that it's not out yet. It's going to be on Steam and perhaps other digital platforms that haven't been announced yet.
There's a new digital platform?
It's the future of digital. It's analog. Yes.
Right, yes. So anyway, on Steam, it's by a company called Octane Games, a little indie Octane Games, and it is a throwback, like old school, vehicle-based combat arena game. So,
Twisted Metal,
ish. Like you play the Wasteland Angel, who's basically Mad Maxine, if you will, and she's got her car with guns mounted on it, and her mission is to basically protect the innocent civilians from, you know, raiders and mutants and, you know, other groups that are looking to basically enslave the humans. Hmm. So, you know. Early levels, you've got a city that's like a hub, and bad guys start flying in from all different area, all different corners. There's a bunch of different vehicle types and stuff, and so you're shooting them up, and then bigger vehicles start showing up, and they'll pull up to the town and start kidnapping people. So you're constantly battling with the people that are trying to kill you, and then zooming back to home base to blow up whoever's kidnapping civilians. And it's the pacing is very, very fast, and it's you get a little sound cue when somebody's getting kidnapped. So
kind of like Defender for a new generation.
For a new generation with cars. So yeah, and there's power ups and upgrades and stuff like that. It was fun. My sort of only major concern about it, which is a major concern, is that 24 levels of that. I don't know. I mean, there's some different environments that are apparently in the full game, and there's some boss fights and stuff, so that could be pretty fun, but. It's a solid arcade arena combat shooter that may not have longevity. I don't know. Mm. It'll sort of – I'll have to wait to see the full thing.
I knew my memory was correct. It was called Ute's Tower. Ute's Tower was the sequel to Sim Tower. It was done by Yute Saito, who was the lead designer. And it came out – of course, the reason it took me a little while to remember it, might have come out in 1999. However, it did just evidently come back out on iOS, because I keep forgetting that there's like iOS games now in an iOS marketplace. Obviously, because I don't have a Mac anymore, which really is a whole other source of frustration. But anyway, evidently on December 15th, it came back out on Mac OS. And if you haven't ever played Ute's Tower, it's a blast. If you like those sort of SimCity, Sim Tower things. That's all I have to say about that. I was right. It was Ute's Tower. I remembered correctly. Anything else, Jeff? Or is we what else you got?
Just a quick shout out to it's another game. I haven't really spent too much time with it, but I had a blast. It's called Wanderlust Rebirth. It's another indie. There's a free demo online, first three levels, $10 for the whole game, which is 10 levels. It is a action RPG co-op game, but it's all like tiny little 8-bit characters and stuff. So you're you got to attack and block, and blocking stuff is timing based, and it's very fast paced and very funny, and very 8-bit graphics, pixelated blood, fighting an 8-bit grizzly bear is pretty awesome, stuff like that. So worth checking out if you're a fan of action RPGs.
Very cool. How about a little listener conversation? Since Journey brought up the interesting element of interaction without interaction, or interaction without social side of it. And one of the commenters on last week's show, VanZan77, asked us for a little advice. Says, I was hoping that the Weekend Confirmed team might be willing to discuss some of the nuts and bolts of the gaming lifestyle. I'm a console gamer and love to play co-op and comp. I think it means comp stomp, multiplayer with friends. I seem to have a hard time finding people to play with, especially when I get away from Call of Duty. I made some friends from random games, but usually never end up playing with them again. What's the best way to find good people to play with who use voice chat? Is there a good place to find and or post an opportunity to schedule a game? Well, it's an interesting question, because as much as Journey answers the question, answers the antecedent of what good co-op matchmaking would be, like, so far, we haven't evolved much beyond that. I mean, like the first poster who responded to him was like, well, yeah, sure, come to Shaq and, like, say you want to play a game. And that's one of the things that Chatty has always been awesome for, is because it's, like, a real-time, live-scrolling environment. People can say, hey, I want to go play this game right now. If you're in the chat room, it's like, oh, okay, well, let's go play that game right now. But it is sort of funny to think that as much as we worry about, like, stat-keeping and online identities and all those other elements that roll around, like, who am I online, that we haven't come up with great ways, and maybe this is what Elite is going to try to address some, great ways to find good people to play with and play with them on a regular basis. Unless you're just, like, making dates with your friends in the conventional sense.
Well, I think community is the answer to that, and I don't know if any of these stat-keeping services engender community. What you're talking about is a community that exists on Shaq News, and I think a lot of websites have communities that pop up around them, and that is what sustains them. And that's what, when you sort of start identifying with a particular website over another, it's because you like the voice of that website, and people who are drawn to the same sort of voice generally can get along.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that I've enjoyed most about doing the Totally Rad Show, is that communities pop up around that. Before I was doing my shows, I took part in other communities and joined a WoW guild based on another website's community. And I think that's the answer to this, is, you know, try to find people who are of similar mind. And the internet is, there's never been a better way to do that than the internet, because you can find people who are not restricted by geography to who they can hang out with. They are more restricted by commonality. And when I was a kid, I didn't have that. I wasn't able to do that. There was no internet when I was a kid, you know? So I think the answer to his question, I don't think resides inside a particular game. It resides on the internet and finding people and trying to break.
But ought it not be inside of a game? As much as effort is being put into, go ahead, Billy.
I don't think you can have a game force you to be friends with, find new
friends. High fives,
friends.
Dude. Over
yeah, but I don't mean that, force you
true.
To.
I mean, actually, when I, it's funny you brought up WoW, because the guild that I first started in, when I first played WoW, I wasn't playing with friends on friend servers. I just started a game, created a character, and started questing, and actually met somebody, you know, quested with somebody. I know this happens rarely, but maybe this happens more in games like WoW, where you
fell
have
in
the
love
team.
And
no, but
rest
we got to be good friends, and you know, we ended up just randomly being online at the same time all the time, and would quest together. He joined a guild, and then I joined his guild, and it was actually cool people. Well, it got worse, but you know, that was a very you know, there's always guild drama when you play WoW.
One of the best mechanics ever to be put in a game is being able to buff another player.
Yeah,
being able to cast a buff on a stranger who isn't in your party.
But like instances, you're kind of.
What are you laughing at? Why is that silly?
I see his 2-year-old mentality. I see where it's going.
If you want to go buff strangers, Garcia. I'm sure there's plenty of places you could go buff strangers.
He said buff, not
damn
fluff.
It.
So, no, but at least
we'll find Jeff at the rest stop later.
Like, you know, I'd get to, there was like a level 10 instance or something like that, and I had to find other people to play with. And
yeah,
it was just like you yell out, and sure, you can end up with, you know, gold farmers and that sort of thing, or you just randomly end up with cool people. But that's so few and far between. I totally agree with you. The communities out there, whether it's a website that you follow like Shaq, or even the game specific community, almost every video game has a community, so go on there and try to find people.
That's funny, because MMOs you think would be like designed in part to get people to to band up and team up. But even there, it's sort of a can be sort of a
challenge.
They
are, and they do, and I think that they're generally successful in that regard. But you know, there's going to be dicks anywhere. Sure.
Amen. I think you guys are overlooking. Well, I think you guys are giving a pass to the design efforts, overlooking a whole big chunk of community, because we become very complacent in defining community now as, well, we have a community manager figurehead and they talk to people on the forums and they tweet and Facebook stuff, and then we have matchmaking services and we have stat keeping and an online persona. There's your community. It's all wrapped up in a nice bundle. Thank you very much. I'm saying I kind of agree. I want to be able to turn on a game, log into the game, and then somehow through all of the, I mean, there's,
hi, this is Garnet. He enjoys,
dude, you're making fun of me,
scatological humor.
I think that there's an
long
opportunity.
Walks on the beach.
I think there's a big missing opportunity for community design to incorporate all those things. And telling me that instead of firing up the game when I want to go play the game, that I should go fire up my web browser and then talk to some people in some chat rooms and stuff until I find a game. I should be able to just go turn on the game, get a good game going, and enjoy it in 20 or 30 minutes instead of screwing around, like, not screwing around, but having a lot of other things. If I want to meet up with my friends, I'll just meet with my friends. I mean, I can easily call Billy or text him and say, hey, dude, I'm going to go play Battlefield right now. You want to go play?
Games are much more concerned with providing you a fair experience rather than a friendly one. And maybe that's wrongheaded. Maybe from your perspective,
I think
that's
wrongheaded.
They're also far more competitive than cooperative, too, which creates a whole, like, if you're playing a competitive game, and yeah, if it's team-based, there's a cooperative element. You want to be able to talk to those people. But if it's not, like, what do you, I mean, you're just going
to
be.
If you show up on the playground to play a pickup game of basketball.
Yes.
Is the game of basketball designed to make you make friends with those people? Do you know what I'm saying?
Dude, you're abstracting the hell out of this, though.
But I don't think it's.
If I show up at the playground to play a game of basketball, I'm going to go have a good time and play basketball with some folks. And if I see, and it's very easy, you know what? So it's very easy for me to go get a look at who's playing basketball on that court right now and say, I cannot play with these dudes and have a good time. I'm going to either get my ass kicked or just not get the ball.
And that's a concern of fairness over friendliness, right? It's not, you're
but,
not,
but
looking
we're not
at
talking
the...
about like just a playground in a block in a town. We're talking about playgrounds that have hundreds of thousands of people playing them at any time. There ought to be a large enough sample selection that any time when I log on, it shouldn't be that hard for me to find a bunch of dudes or gals or just folks like me who want to play and have like a similar sort of game experience. And they've collected fuck tons of data. They're just not interested in pulling it together for that emphasis. They're interested in pulling it together for like, here's your kill to death ratio with the AR-15. Here's your kill to death ratio when you're using a 4x scope on this map with like, great. Someone wants to see all that. I'd rather somehow it pulls together like, you know what, you'd like to play with these people. Hey, we know like it could be pulling all that stuff in the background.
Sure. I would love for me to be able to flip on Xbox Live and play a game like play Halo Reach and not end up with a bunch of dicks.
People I don't think that's impossible. You know,
I think it's very impossible.
I don't think it's impossible.
I don't think
there's been any design. I don't think there's been as much design emphasis put on that as there has been on the things.
I think anonymity works a cross purpose to that. I mean, I think that going on and playing with you know Butterdog 71.
Butterdog?
I don't know. I don't know where I got that from. Is what you call a girl if you like everything about her butter dog? I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
I thought it was the most unhealthy ballpark snack.
Exactly. That too. No, I don't know.
Take us to the break because now we are completely derailed.
I'm just saying that dealing with a stranger who just shot you in the head does not make you start a friendship.
I'm not saying it has to be. All right, we're coming back to this. Right now we have 28 May with This Is How It Goes.
Thank you.
rock group 28 May with This Is How It Goes. And congratulations to Sean Madigan and Melissa Hale, who have both been longtime listeners of the show. Thank you so much. Congratulations on your marriage, and may you have many, many happy years together.
Yeah, this is at least we could do in memoriam of that guy's last gaming that he'll be doing.
Oh, dude, maybe they game together. Couples that game together.
Yeah, they high five, get medals. They're excited.
Fist bump.
Right. The spillover from the discussion about multiplayer ran right into the break, so we're going to run right back out of it because Billy says he has an idea. But right before that, the thing I really want to catch for a second is, Jeff, what did you say as we were getting ready to come back here?
Well, what did I say?
That if there was a switch in your
if there was a button in my Xbox Live settings that I could toggle that said only play with people over 30, I would have that fucker checked all the time.
And why couldn't there be?
They could do age verification via credit cards.
I think they should do it like the old Leisure Suit Larry games when they just ask questions. Do you ever guys ever do that?
Yeah, they would
when
never know.
When I was a kid,
my
dad's like, okay, if you can pass the questions, you can play. And I'd be like, no, I don't know about Vietnam. Damn it.
But seriously, age verification would make things so much better if you want to play with mature people. If you say, like, I really don't want to play with, you start up a Halo game on Saturday afternoon and Garrett, you're pretty much going to get 12-year-olds.
What about the 16-year-old kid who is super mature for his age or her age?
I'm okay with
what you always say, Garnet.
Then they can.
Officers are not going
she
to
told
believe
me she was 36.
Oh dear.
There should be a way to filter that out. I really do believe that it needs to be done. It could be done via credit cards. It could be done, if most kids don't ever, I don't know. I'm not sure that
the age thing is such a hard lock because there are plenty of 35-year-old meatheads as well. So
there's not like an anti-dietary test.
That is true. There's a bunch of pot smoking jagoffs that are,
I'm not a jagoff. anyway. So was age verification your idea?
Well, at least through credit cards, yeah.
See, I don't think it needs to be age verification. I think that we just haven't thought about it.
At least that would help a little bit.
It could. But again, back to my thing, and joking aside, there are plenty of people of any number of ages that don't fit into some stereotypical model, whether it be, the 35-year-old person who's super aggro or the 14-year-old person who's super mature for their age.
Trying to do something along those lines with the sort of the stars that are underneath your gamer tag?
Yeah, but everybody got five-starred and it never worked, completely fell apart.
Everybody got five-starred within the first month.
Yeah. And then it completely became irrelevant.
Well, and they didn't put any investment in it. They didn't put any back. I mean, it's not like they ever did anything to that or the, what zone are you in? Has it ever mattered what freaking zone you're in?
I'm underground.
I'm pro. Yeah, I'm pro, dude.
Those are the two things that they screwed up with. The rest of the stuff they did with Xbox Live was pretty awesome, achievements and everything else.
I'm just saying the next sophistication that could be added in here is to bring in some of these elements.
The douchebag test.
Yeah.
How about this?
Which shirt would you wear?
Yeah.
just record 10 minutes of their online audio, and if they drop N-bombs or F-bombs with reckless abandon, you just go...
The questionnaire, a woman walks into the room.
You're gonna laugh. Hire a few of the development team from Match.com and let them go to work on the back end of Xbox.
Hmm. Do you have a personality profile on Xbox?
Absolutely.
Live?
Absolutely. Maybe
I think you're thinking of the other dating site, but not Match. But the other one, I can't think of what it is.
What?
eHarmony.
That one.
I mean, okay. I don't know.
Fine.
You have to answer 200 questions to find out if you're a douche or not.
So
right. I'd be great if
I would help. Be great. Is that what you said?
No. I'd be great at answering. And like that dude walks out
totally
on screen.
Not
like,
a dude.
We match you on 200 points of compatibility. But why hasn't someone thought about this? Especially
then you would fall in love with everyone you play games with.
Fine.
But Jeff, so I'm already in love with you. But you follow what I'm saying. I mean,
anytime I'd play Madden, I'd be playing Packers versus Packers all the time. What the fuck is going on here?
See, now we're just belittling the whole thing, but this is what I would like to see. I would like to see social side of game development move on.
You win, Billy. No, you win, other Billy.
Sweet.
We both win.
All right, I've lost this topic.
No. If you're interested in this topic, I want to keep talking about this.
It's ripe for comedy, but you're right. The underpinning of what you're saying is totally right.
I mean, do you really want, like, you're like, I'm going to go home after this and play some pickup games of Halo?
Because
it's not fun. It kind of takes the
fun
out of it.
If I could go home, are you fucking kidding me? If I could go home and turn on Halo and get matched up with people through some reason other than just I happened to be on at the same time and my rank was the same, because people know how to game the ranks anyway to make themselves look good. But it was actually like I'd log in and I had done some sort of 200 question questionnaire, or it was looking at all the data from all the times that I've played and pulling those together with all the other people that have played and said, oh, you know what? Out of the people that are online right now, here's a group that we think would have a good play experience and would match me up. Fuck yeah, I'd go home and play that all the time, because I bet I would have a lot more fun.
Outside of age and age verification and things like that, unless there's like, you know, thousands of people that are overseeing all, like God basically over, you know, watching like all the games that are being played online, like I don't know how else they could do it.
Do you think there's that many people overseeing eHarmony?
I don't know. There's that one doctor.
I don't know if it's applicable.
You guys know I used to work there.
Didn't know that. Yes.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's all I'm saying about that.
But there's a lot that can be done algorithmically through managing data on the back end that hasn't even really, to from outside perspective, doesn't seem to me to have even been dabbled with.
I really honestly think the bigger challenge is the fact that you are only dealing with someone's voice and fake name. That there is more sort of human behavioral
This gets into another part of social game design that I'm really interested in that we need to figure out a way to establish the social contract in the online space.
I agree with that.
And I don't see a lot of effort being put into that either. Again, we're more worried about figuring out, like, how do we have a better badge or a better way to show off what we're wearing than how do we find a way to control the interaction so that everybody knows they have a safe place that they can interact together
with. I agree 100% with that. And it's a tough problem, though.
It's a tough problem, but we need to start digging into it if we're going to make progress in online spaces. And online gaming, obviously, super popular, but is it going to fall on its own weight eventually from like people just being frustrated and pissed off and saying, you know what, fuck this?
You know, no one's going to want to hear this, but you know what the actual saving grace might end up being? Facebook.
Okay.
Or real names, I buy that. Like Blizzard.
Yeah.
With Blizzard, you
have Real ID.
Real ID.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, if what Facebook seems to be doing, which is sort of they seem to be working on some sort of competitor to the iOS store, mm-hmm. you know, the app store. Why couldn't I think of that? And if it becomes a platform, if Facebook,
well, it already is a platform,
but a platform for all kinds of different games.
That's actually in Uncharted 3, because you can toggle between your friends on your friends list and your PlayStation, or you could log into Facebook instead of, and we're not talking about like I beat level 2, but like you can play against your Facebook friends.
Yep. Hmm.
And that's one whole section.
So there's another way to start bringing that in.
I don't know.
I thought that was really cool.
I don't know.
Maybe not Facebook, but some sort of, I mean, what's preventing Microsoft from making their own little, you know, friends list thing that creates its own group and allows you to,
you know, have 100.
But if we're going to go back into friends listing stuff, I'm not going to back down off my social management thing, but the contract is another big element that needs to start finding its way into, if it's not going to find its way into the ecosystem, then it's going to have to find its way into each individual game. There has to be some...
Well, not even games, but just the web.
That's a bigger problem to tackle.
It's an equal problem. I mean, it's the same problem, really.
It's the same problem, but it's on a much larger scale.
Yeah, I mean, look at the fucking wasteland of human depravity that is YouTube comments. You know what I mean?
I'd rather not.
It's the same difference, really. It's the same problem at work. It's, for some reason, the online experience engenders complete rampant id. You know,
when you're hiding behind, when you're anonymous and you're hiding behind just a random name or whatever, everybody, you feel much more empowered to be able to do whatever the hell you want to. There's no rules or there's no repercussions for, you know, you being a douchebag.
Yeah. And people just treat each other like shit. Well, I agree with you. Social contract. Let's make it.
I'm so depressed.
I've definitely been playing a lot of Facebook games lately because I'm very interested in seeing how that world's going to evolve. And it's, you know, on one hand, number one, I'm really, as I expressed last week, disappointed in Empires and Allies not having more meat to it than the fundamental Zynga like mechanism. It's still basically the Zynga, like, you're either marketing for us or you're paying us, which is bothersome to me. But the other thing is that like Facebook games haven't really evolved in the way they interact with Facebook at all.
I agree with that too.
None of the things that I'm doing when I'm on Facebook are things that I'm doing when I'm playing Facebook games. There's not anything interesting or wonderful about, hi Billy, I'm going to gift you a diploma or some whatever, you know, it is.
But I think we're in the infancy of that.
We're absolutely in the infancy of it, but we've been in that, but we've sort of hit a point and jammed up here for like the last year and a half. And it's time to see someone do something different. It's time to see someone like push forward a little more and like how am I interacting? Because Facebook is a social medium and there's lots of things that we do on there that are fun. But like right now, playing the game is just I'm just playing a game and then it's like clicking a button and making something show on somebody's wall. Whoopee. Mm-hmm. Like there's got to be more to it than that. Let's see. Let's do some discussion news. Let's see. What do we have here? We have the aforementioned. In our, if you watched the break or the knockout round, we'd had Resident Evil titles, and one of them just came out. That would be Resident Evil the Mercenaries 3D, and there's a bit of an uproar over a very simple little footnote in the instruction manual that reads, note, saved data on this software cannot be reset.
Say what?
No.
So try selling that to you back to GameStop.
So the budding controversy then exploded when GameStop initially blocked the ability to trade in the game. The statement we had from them was that GameSpot did ask the U.S. stores to stop accepting trades on Resident Evil the Mercenaries 3D as we evaluated the save system for the game. And Capcom's response to the reasoning behind the decision has been, in Resident Evil the Mercenaries 3D, all mission progress is saved directly to the Nintendo 3DS cartridge where it cannot be reset. The nature of the game invites high levels of replayability in order to improve mission scores. In addition, this feature does not remove any content available for users. Secondhand game sales were not a factor in this development decision, so we hope that all our consumers will be able to enjoy the entirety of the survival action experiences that the game does offer.
Well, secondhand game sales weren't a factor, but it's nice to be able to flip a little bird that direction.
That was the footnote to that story.
So, what do you guys think about them only allowing one non-resettable save? Now, admittedly, the Mercenaries 3D, if you're not familiar with it, is not a traditional playthrough of 4 or 5. It's pieces of them. It's definitely score modeled.
Yeah, it's like an arena system.
Yeah, it's high scores.
It's definitely high score modeled. How do you feel, though, about never being able to reset it? I mean, my problem, like, look, I realize that the whole used games situation is a very and rental games as well. You know, disclaimer that we're obviously owned by GameFly, but rental games also a source of sore spot for several developers. However, what about like Resident Evil is a classic. What about 5 or 6 years from now if I find this cartridge and come across it and say, wow, I'd like to fucking play that again, but it's already, you know, where I had beaten it like 4 or 5 times and powered up.
Yeah,
that's not cool.
Yeah, it's utter BS to do that. Like I
Jeff's on the other, he's on the, it's utter BS.
I would certainly
fuck these guys.
No, I mean, I wouldn't, and I would vote with my dollars or lack thereof. I just wouldn't buy a game that
your lack of dollars.
My lack of dollars. Yes. Yeah.
I am poor to spite you.
Yeah, exactly. And I am so not buying this even more than I was.
I'm purposely not making enough money to buy this.
No, I mean, I just,
well, that explains it.
I mean, unless there's some sort of mechanical underpinning, which there isn't, for doing that, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Like, why? I mean, why not just have, even if it was just a physical toggle on the cartridge that you could, you know, reset the whole thing?
Well, the good news is, like, the age of cartridges is mostly behind us, so it's not going to be a common problem, but.
Well, it's something that can still happen all the time in 3DS, and it's true. You could easily software wire it in. I mean, it's not
it's flash based media, for Christ's sake. You can't tell me you can't reset that.
It's very hard to reset.
Somebody's going to figure it out.
I'm sure it is.
Somebody's going to figure it out.
All right, so it sounds like we're pretty much just completely against that idea, and there's not much more to say about it. That's fine. We can move on.
I don't see a reason in favor of it, to be honest with you.
All right. Big development that Jeff was quite proud of his prognostication skills over is that World of Warcraft has quietly gone free to play up to level 20. Now,
nailed it.
Little disclaimer here. First of all, this is all revolving around patch 4.2, which was the second push for Cataclysm. It's called Rage of the Firelands. And in the second paragraph of the press release that came out was a little note about how the trial mode has been changed. It's no longer a 10 or a 14-day free trial. It's now an open trial that allows you to play any character from the original game or the Burning Crusades, which means that you can have a Draenei or a Blood Elf, up to level 20, however much you want, up to level 20. Now, with some restrictions.
Yeah, well, and the restrictions, smart restrictions.
There's a lot of restrictions here. You can get a max of 10 gold. Trade skills are capped at 100 ranks. You cannot trade via the auction house, mailbox, or player to player. You can't access public chat channels. You can say and party or whisper to friends. You can't create or join guilds. You can't invite other players into a party. You'll only be able to join parties with characters under level 20. There's no voice chat. You're always at the bottom of the login queue for any realms that are on queues. And that's really, and no real ID features and no character transfers.
Those make a lot of sense.
Okay.
They're all there to prevent.
But that sort of disrails your free to play.
It's not really free to play. No, it's a shitty trial. That's what it is.
It's actually not as good as a 15-day free trial, because you could certainly get past level 20 easily.
A lot of people brought that up. A lot of people are like, this actually sucks because you could go way past 20 on
It's a shitty trial.
Semantically, it is a huge shift in how they're positioning the game for the future.
I'm going to be anti-semantic.
Okay.
I think that's a silly argument.
Well,
because
perhaps it is, but I honestly think that that's where the game will go. It's where the game is going to go.
But the second you want to...
But it's not what they're doing here.
The second you want to do anything like substantial in the game, and not even substantial, like a lot of the basic shit, like auction house stuff, like...
Yeah, but you know that if they allowed...
That's
any
exactly
of this
it.
To happen.
The second you want to, which is why it makes it a shitty trial, is you're gonna pay up. Which
this is why you're
anyway.
Semantic. This is why I said it was being anti-semantic, is because your semantics argument is that, well, they're going spiritually towards being free to play. But after reading all of that, I'm with Billy. I don't think they are. I think they're just changing. They're changing the way they tweak the crack to try and give you that first hit. But they're not
possibly, and it's a more of a marketing speak change where we're competing with the free to plays, because a part of our game is free to play as well.
Because come on, some of this stuff is really big time stuff. If they were semantically, like, look at the games that are successful in free to play, they don't wall off substantial features like auction housing.
All of you can't complain about that, because all of that is to protect players of the game. All of that is to prevent.
Okay.
Gold farmers from just...
So then by your argument...
That does make sense.
Then again, by your argument, they can't take World of Warcraft free-to-play, period. So your semantics argument is again thrown out.
Well...
Because if they took it free-to-play, all of those protections would still have to be there, which means they can't take it free-to-play, and you can't have it both ways. You can't say, oh, they're trying to go free-to-play, but they have to put on all these protections.
I'm saying that eventually they're going to go free-to-play. That's going to be a move that this game can... Definitely.
So then what about all these protections that you need to have?
I think when you said that, though, that was when after the next game comes out.
Yeah. I mean, it's not immediately.
This is not free to play.
This is when subscribers really start to wane and they need a place to take that game and that can squeeze out a few extra dollars. It can totally go free to play.
Sure. That I'm not going to argue with you. But I don't think that this is as big. After looking at it in more detail, I don't think it's as big an indicator as I initially did. And I wrote the story the first time, because I read that and I was like, holy shit, it's going free to play. But then we got the clarifications and stuff, and I'm like, you know.
I wish everybody that wrote free to play would change their stories now, because when I read it, I'm like, ooh, wow, free to play. And I didn't read the restrictions because I don't care. I'm still paying my money. So,
yeah.
But
do you still play?
When this new patch came out, I'm having problems with my authenticator because my phone reset. So I'm having to deal with all this bullshit. I can't log in yet. So, but whatever. Like, that's not free to play.
No, it's really not. And the other question that I ask, I asked this on the Shaq Twitter, is how many people do you think it'll bring in? It was surprising to me. A lot of people were like, yeah, I'll give it a try again. So I think that it's interesting because they are able to straddle both sides of the line. While I don't think that semantically, like Jeff thinks, I don't think it is semantically a move to free to play. I think that they benefited from the idea of it being free to play, and from folks like myself immediately saying, oh, wow, it is free to play.
Well, it's
and
also
that they get that pickup.
When you hear 14-day free trial, all of a sudden there's this pressure.
Time limit, yeah.
Oh, crap. If I don't play enough in 14 days, whereas you could play way more in 14 days than you could ever do it to 20.
A 14-day trial is what it is. It's a trial. Like, you're getting to try all of the feature set of the game, so you understand everything. With this, you're like, hey,
Jeff, they had these restrictions on trial.
All of those restrictions were on trial?
Not the level cap, I don't believe, but the stuff any, like the auction house stuff and the, yeah.
Anytime you can throw up infinity accounts for free, they're going to need to put those restrictions in or else the game will break because people will break it. But I think if they went free to play, a lot of things would change that would even that all out. The whole economy would have to be rearranged.
Dogs would sleep with horses.
Yeah, cats and dogs living together.
Mass hysteria.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. It didn't cause mass hysteria because it was more or less expected. However, the Supreme Court of the United States of America did afford full First Amendment protections to video games at the start of this week in a 7-2 decision that we will we'll see in the coming years how landmark it is. But it does, you know, it has been written as a landmark decision, has been written as something that would establish strong legal precedents. The prevailing decision summarized, video games qualify for First Amendment protection like protected books, plays, and movies. They communicate ideas through familiar literary devices and features distinctive to the medium, and the basic principles of freedom of speech do not vary with a new and different communication medium. So this was the ruling in response to the California attempt to restrict the sale of violent video games to minors. Violent video games, violence seems to be the buzzword that comes up all the time in this conversation is sort of a way that I think the proponents of having some sort of ban try to win over hearts. Because, I mean, obviously, it's pretty easy to win people over when you say, well, you don't want your kids to be learning violence. But it really wasn't about violence, was it? You guys just stunned mullets.
Just, stunned
just
mullet.
Lost.
No, I – yeah.
I'm no, not, yeah.
We need Spicer on here to give his
opinion. I know, really. Like, wow, okay.
No, video games are the new rock and roll. And there's always somebody, you know, those video games, they're wrecking America and they're wrecking kids. And
they're the devil's plaything.
It's true.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be challenged again. However, the decision looks pretty solid. Looks pretty well written. And it would be very interesting to hear Christian's opinion on this. So, Christian, hop into the forum or into the shacknews.com show notes and tell us what we haven't thought of or what we don't know. Last but not least, as promised, Summer of Arcade dates and pricing. It starts July 20th. There are 5 games. The first, so I have my 2 must-haves, which I tweeted about earlier, but it's funny to hear
Bastion
is a must-have. It's 15. So it starts on the July 20th with Bastion for $15. Next week is From Dust, my other must-have, also $15. August 3rd is Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet for $15.
That's looks like be a pretty close
it
to
does
a
look have. It does look really, really good. I just like I said, I picked 2 and my 2 were Bastion and From Dust. And then there's like the sort of what inclusion, which is August 10th, you get Fruit Ninja Connect for $10.
They gotta have a Connect game.
And then August 17th.
I think that game could be really cool.
You're okay. A fruit ninja.
Yeah, you are.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
August 17th is the Toy Soldiers follow-up, Toy Soldiers Cold War. So here's my problem with the inclusion of Fruit Ninja Connect. If you buy all 5 of these games, that's when you get the big kicker, which is that you get Crimson Alliance on September 7th for free, which looks badass. Mm-hmm. However, the fact that they've sold, what is it now, 5 million Kinects or something, is only a drop in a bucket compared to how many 360s they have out there. It's so asinine. Well,
what do they care? Yeah, they're trying to get you to buy that more
what's
stuff.
What's the price difference between Fruit Ninja Connect and
it's $5 less.
Yeah. Okay, so you're out $5, really.
So you're out $5, and you're stuck with a Kinect game that you don't give a shit about if you don't have a Kinect.
Well, no. You just buy all the other games except for Kinect Fruit Ninja.
Or, and then
you end up spending $5 more.
It's not their responsibility to make their super special deal.
Yes, actually, I think it is. Make your deal applicable to all owners. Why are you telling me that because I don't own a Kinect, you're going to screw me?
They're incentivizing purchasing a Kinect.
Their job. Incentivize your Kinect in other manners, but don't punish me in your Summer of Arcade. I think it's bullshit.
A, they're going to put a Kinect game in there because Microsoft, if you paid attention to E3, Kinect is kind of a big deal to that company.
Dude, I did pay attention.
It's a big initiative to them. And they don't owe you shit. You know, they're not. Have they ever said
fine,
if you buy
these
5
games? I'm not
saying
they owe me shit, but I'm saying if you're
going
to offer.
The 6th free? Did they ever do that before? Is this like a standard?
In Summer of Arcade?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've always had the Summer of Arcade promotion where it's like you bought a bunch and you got the discount. Yeah.
Mm. But it'd be like a Wii bundle that one of the 5 games required you to have Motion Plus or whatever. And you didn't. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, what the fuck?
It's bullshit. It's bullshit. You're offering it a special deal, and then you're saying at the end of the special deal, by the way, if you don't have a Kinect, we don't really care about you as much, because we're only into Kinect right now. And by the way, we're going to throw in a iPhone game turned into a Kinect game and force you to buy that for your Kinect. Give me a fucking break.
I don't know, dude. I feel like their whole job is to incentivize purchasing stuff.
Okay.
Just because...
This doesn't incentivize me. This actually makes me look at this list and go, you know what? I'll buy Bastion and From Dust and fuck you the rest of them.
Well, that's your prerogative.
Whereas if it was buy all five and get the sixth one for free and all five of them were like at least playable by me,
what if
I'd
the
jump right
sixth
on
one
it?
That you got for free was the Kinect game?
Then I would especially be pissed off.
Thanks for nothing,
jackasses.
All right. Well, see, it's better than that. I think he's happy now, guys.
It's true.
Thank you, Mr. Silver Lining. Jeez. I'm just saying that, like, yeah, it's their job to incentivize. There are plenty of ways they can incentivize Kinect. They could have added Kinect as an option, like have the Fruit Ninja game as an option, and then if you do that, you get some other Kinect game bonus. Like, they could have tied it like that. They could have still given me, as not interested in my Kinect, a way to still get games that I would have been into all of them and buy all of them. I hear your point. I just think that it's shitty to throw this one random Kinect game in at the very end of it and have it be like this silly, it's $5 less game, and it's an iOS game that's been turned into a Kinect game. Come on. Come on!
Come on! That's my new epithet is Fruit Ninja. I just called Jeff. Jeff, you were my trial, but I think I'm going to stick with that for a while.
All right. As we wind down the show here, that can only mean that it's one thing left. That would be finishing moves. Let's do them.
All right.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves!
Yeah!
I've not heard that one. I'm sorry.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Do you listen to the show ever?
It's bizarro.
Well, let's just go around the horn on today's. We'll start off down there with Mr. Jeff Mattis. Jeff, finish him.
Well, my finishing move is take the podcast back and listen to the indie spot again and pick up a couple of those bad boys, because those indie games are awesome. Frozen Synapse, Jamestown, Grand Prix Story, Wasteland Angel. Actually, that's not out yet. Atom Zombie Smasher, Cat in the Coup for free, and Wanderlust Rebirth.
Yeah, I think, just to hop onto that, I think that it'll always... I would love to have you assign us stuff and have to play it. And I think you should always mention, after we've talked about the game, its title again. Because it's easy for people to forget.
Yeah, fair enough, especially with the indies.
Especially an audio show where you're like...
It's like an indie book club kind of thing.
There you go.
I'm totally down with that.
All right, Billy Berghammer. By the way, the reason they're talking about this plan is they're trying to talk me into it. So I guess we're now on the hook that every time Jeff's going to be on the week before Jeff's going to be on, he's going to give us assignments. So okay, you've won. You've won. Okay, you've won. You won. Billy Berghammer, finish him.
Means I'm going to fail. I fail assignments. Whatever. My old finishing moon was football. Seriously, what the fuck?
Oh,
let's get this shit. But my real finishing move is, if you're going to use gyroscopic controls on the 3DS. As you all know, Garnett, because you bitched about this a lot, the second you tilt the 3DS a little bit, you know, if you tilt it too much, you completely lose everything.
Lose the 3DS.
The one thing I didn't mention when I was talking about Ocarina of Time is the way that the 3DS uses gyroscopic controls. So now, when they announced it, they said, oh, you can totally whip your, you know, when you're using the slingshot or the bow and arrow, you can like move around and all that. So you don't have to use that. What's actually really cool is, like, say you're, you know, you've pulled back the... whatever the
yoke,
the thing for the slingshot or the bow, and you're aiming already with the slide pad. If you say you just need to adjust a little bit, you just move up a little bit, and you can still see what's going on, and it works really well. I don't want to see this bullshit that they're talking about with like Star Fox, where you're like, woo, and you're like, you're basically playing Flower, you know, but with a 3DS, that is not going to work. If you're going to use the gyroscope, please just use it correctly. Take a cue from Ocarina of Time.
You tell him.
One of the greatest games of this year. Just saying. Done.
Jeff Cannata, finish him.
Mine is more of a question for the audience. We're here in summer. Sun is shining, getting beautiful outside, and we're in the
unless
yearly...
you're in the Midwest, or Seattle,
crappy?
Or San Francisco.
Yeah. All right. Forget what I said.
Never mind.
never mind.
Sorry to be poopy pants.
We are in the perennial... downtime for
yes.
game releases, right?
Yes.
What do they call it? The drought, right? The game drought. I want to know from the audience, Are you like me where you kind of dig the drought? Like, would you actually want a big release every single week of the year? Or is it give you a great time? Billy?
Fuck yeah, I do. But, like, I agree with you. I like having
it. How are you using this game drought? Are you playing games? Are you finishing games that you started? Are you checking out, like, Jeff offered up some great indie titles? How are you using the drought? What do you do in the summer? Do you not play games? Do you go outside and play? Do you watch big summer movies, big movie season? What do you do?
I would like the audience to know that this was not in any way premeditated. As a matter of fact, I will have Mr. Jeff Cannata read my finishing move.
Same.
Read my finishing move.
Summer pile of shame attack, go, go, go.
So that's my answer right there. Summer pile of shame attack, folks. It's on right now. The starting gun has fired. Look, even until Summer of Arcade, you've got a month. Go pick something off your pile of shame and dive into it and get some of those games. I have so many piled up. I don't even know where to go.
But
I'm going to pick something.
The drought used to be January, February, March.
Yes.
That became second Christmas.
Yeah.
Summer is the last part where there still are big games. I mean, fucking Infamous. I mean, there's Zelda, you know, there's all these games that are out. Games are going to start finding this hole to be there, to be that one game that you're like, oh, you know, like when Batman came out.
That's true. Comparatively, I'm looking at some of the stuff I haven't played, like the Red Faction, which we talked about earlier. And then I'm thinking, but I got to go back and say, like, Badge of Shame. I never played Assassin's Creed 2. I really want to play Assassin's Creed 2.
Maybe now
is when I go grab it. Because I got to play that to get to Brotherhood. Or I still have the Yakuza games that I'm just dying to play.
Speaking of not finishing games.
You can't ever play those or else the world will end.
Speaking
I
want to
finish Witcher 2. That's my goal.
So there you go.
Finish Witcher
2. So there you go. Summer pile of shame attack, folks. Go, go, go. All right, now we're to the end of the show. Let's see. That was 28 May. But with the music break today, we will have more in the show notes. But their website is 28-may.com. You can also get them on facebook.com/28may. Thanks to Brooklyn for wrangling us by herself today.
Yes,
thanks, Brooklyn.
Well, happy birthday, Del Rio.
I'm going to throw this one out. My little brother. For those of you who didn't know, I have a little brother. My little brother is writing. In a couple weeks in the Courage Classic. And the Courage Classic, much like Brooklyn did, is a bike ride for charity. This
awesome.
One is for the Children's Hospital. And it would be great if we could just help him out a little bit. He just did the MS-150 week before last.
One of my really good friends does that every year.
So he had to pony up about $400 because he didn't make his goal. So it'd be really nice if we could help him get over his goal. This is for the Children's Hospital, and I will have the link in the show notes as well, but it's really simple. It's couragetours.com/2011/Andrew Lee.
Help out little Lee.
Help my little brother out. This one's hardcore. It's like 3 days of riding across all these passes in Colorado. So he's killing himself. All he's committed to is, I think he's committed to the base is like $500. So if we could help him get to that, that would be great. And Children's Hospital, can't beat that. Jeff, you can catch up with every day on the Totally Rad Show.
Yeah, we got a big Transformers 3 review that's out now. Also, I want to start mentioning Comic-Con. We have a live panel again at Comic-Con Friday night. If you're going to be at Comic-Con, please come say hi. It's in room 7AB at 8 o'clock Friday night the 22nd. It should be a lot of fun. It always is every year, and I think we got some fun surprises this year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And
one big surprise that I think people are not going to want to miss.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's going to be Jeff Cannata naked on stage.
God damn it. It was a surprise, Garnett.
And an awesome Shadows of the Damned review coming up
here. Yeah, Garnett's going to be on the show. So look for that next week.
Billy, anything you want to plug before you dash out the door?
No.
Hire Billy.
hire
He's
me.
A hell of a guy.
I'm looking for work. I did take some time off, obviously. I joke about it a lot, but I am looking for stuff for work.
Just keep him here in LA. And then Jeff down
Please
there.
Please don't. Get me the fuck out of here.
Aww. Well, there goes your references.
God damn it.
I was going to be
it's
one
like
of your
four
references.
Companies.
Of course, you can read more Jeff on Indie Games Channel or shagnews.com.
Correct.
That's it, folks. That is your weekend confirmed. Until next week, we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop. my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.